Yes, thank you.
Assembly members? All right. I will call the June 8th, 2015, Assembly Meeting 2015-16 to order at 7:02. Would you all please rise for the flag salute, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Roll call, please.
Ms. Becker? Here. Ms. Crane?
Here.
Mr. Jones?
Here.
Ms. Gladyszewski?
Here.
Mr. Keel?
Here.
Mr. Nankervis?
Here.
Ms. Kroll?
Here.
Ms. White?
Here.
Mayor Sanford?
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you, and we read you loud and clear, Ms. Kate.
Oh, good.
So we have a special order of business tonight, a proclamation for Pride Month. Do we have anybody to accept the award? Come on up.
Okay, this is from the Office of the Mayor of the City and Borough of Juneau, Alaska. Proclamation. Whereas Juneau Pride is sponsored each year by Southeast Gay and Lesbian Alliance and Fifth Flag, Juneau, parents, families, and friends of lesbians and gays. Two organizations that provide a full range of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender social and support services. And whereas the capital city is home to many well-respected LGBT leaders in all professional fields, including the arts, medical, legal, business, and faith communities. And whereas Juneau Pride 2015 is a celebration of Alaska's diversity and of the LGBT community's tremendous contributions to the local, statewide, national, and world communities. And whereas Juneau Pride 2015 commemorates the 1969 Stonewall riots, considered by many to be the catalyst for the LGBT movement for civil rights in the United States. And whereas Juneau Pride 2015 is an opportunity to unite individuals, organizations, businesses, and community leaders in support of freedom from discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. And whereas Juneau Pride 2015 promotes dignity, equality, and self-affirmation for LGBT Alaskans, thus supporting all Juneau residents' efforts to participate fully in the social and economic life of our city. And whereas Juneau Pride 2015 will share its celebration by inviting the entire Juneau community to participate in a week of cultural events beginning Monday, June 12th, and highlighted by the annual Pride Picnic held at Sandy Beach on Sunday, June 21st, from 12 to 4 p.m. Now, therefore, I, Merrill Sanford, Mayor of the City and Borough of Juneau, Alaska, on behalf of the City and Borough Assembly, do hereby proclaim June 2015 as Juneau Pride 2015 and encourage the Juneau community to celebrate the diversity of Alaskans. In witness whereof, I am here to set my hand and cause the seal of the City and Borough of Juneau, Alaska, to be affixed this 8th day of June 2015.
Thank you, ladies. Okay, the next thing on our agenda is approval of minutes. We have before us the May 18th regular assembly meeting number 2015-14, Are there any corrections or objections to their being approved? Seeing and hearing none, the 2015-14 minutes are approved. We have before us May 19, 2015, Special Assembly Meeting 2015-15. Is there any corrections? Is there any objections to their approval? Hearing and seeing none, 2015-15 is approved. April 20th, 2015, Special Assembly Meeting Number 2015-11 as amended. Is there any corrections? Is there any amendments or changes to the set of minutes? Seeing and hearing none, 2015-11 as amended is accepted. Manager's request for agenda changes, Madam?
None, thank you.
Shall we do this first? We'll do this first. If I'm going to guess. Everybody, it is the manager's birthday today.
So we have to be not a bad thing. I'd rather be doing that.
We have to be good tonight and get it through this meeting in a timely manner. And all of us wish the city manager a very happy birthday. And I know you're young. Happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank you.
Sad that you had to be here. So.
And a follow-up on it, of course, is the lawyer's birthday.
Tomorrow.
On Wednesday.
Oh,
Wednesday.
Oh,
Wednesday,
no, I thought it was Wednesday.
Tomorrow,
next Wednesday. Real soon. Well, I can check my calendar now.
Real soon is the city man, or is the city law department's birthday. And we want to say thank you very much to Amy and all the work that she does. And now I hear we have another director or somebody.
HR Director Mila.
HR Director. You guys are all getting very old quick. The HR Director is in the audience. Congratulations and happy birthday to you. Anybody else? All right. We'll move forward on manager requests for agenda changes. Madam Manager?
None, thank you.
Thank you. Public participation on non-agenda items. We have five people signed up, and they're all both are on, all five of them are on agenda items. So we'll hear your comments when we get to public testimony on both those items, the sign regulation and McGinnis LID. Is there anybody from the public who wishes to give us any comment on non-agenda items? Seeing none, public comment is closed, and we will move forward to the consent agenda. Does anyone from the public request consent agenda changes other than ordinances for introduction? It's your chance as the public to say you want something pulled from the consent agenda, and seeing none, we'll close public participation on consent agenda items and move to assembly requests for consent agenda changes. Seeing, hearing none, we'll move forward for assembly action. Ms. Becker?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move the assembly adopt the consent agenda and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there any objections? Boy, the manager's going to give her a wish here. Maybe.
Don't jinx it.
Hey, if that didn't work so good for mine.
I wouldn't count.
All right, we'll move forward to item 8, public hearing. And Madam Clerk, could you please read the title for Ordinance 2015-26?
An ordinance approving a land trade between the city and borough and Christ Evangelical Lutheran Church.
Thank you, Madam Manager. Report, please.
In order to develop CBJ property on Peterson Hill to meet housing needs, the CBJ must first secure access routes to the property from Glacier Highway. Christ Evangelical Lutheran Church has demonstrated interest in an equal area land trade that would be mutually beneficial. As a result of the land trade, the CBJ would gain and reliable access point that allows for a cost-effective development of utilities, as well as a four-way intersection off of Glacier Highway that was recommended by Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. The church gains land that could be developed for future expansion, safe direct access to the proposed right-of-way, as well as a driveway and future sewer hookup. This land trade would facilitate the next phase of planning and development of the Peterson Hill residential subdivision and provide access for future projects higher up on Peterson Hill. On April 14, 2015, the Planning Commission reviewed and recommended approval of this land trade. The Lands Committee expressed its support for the land trade at its meeting on May 4, 2015. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you, Madam Manager. Is there anybody from the public who wishes to comment on Ordinance 2015-26? Seeing none, public comment is closed. We'll move forward to assembly action. Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move adoption of Ordinance 2015-26, and I would ask for unanimous consent.
Is there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Madam Clerk, would you please read the next agenda item, Ordinance 2015-28.
An ordinance creating local improvement district number 62 to improve the roadway within the McGinnis subdivision and appropriating the sum of $3 million.
Thank you, Madam. I almost called you Madam Manager. Madam Manager, admin report.
The streets to be paved in this LID are Steelhead Street, Silver Street, Hummingbird Lane, Heron Way, and Wren Drive. The total project cost is $3 million, and the total of all proposed assessment for this LID is $472,000. An informal poll of the property owners was conducted. The informal ballots were due on April 8, 2015. 83 responses were received from a total of 125 properties. Of those responses received, 58 were in favor of the LID and 25 opposed it. LID 62 was reviewed by the Public Works and Facilities Committee at its April 13, 2015 meeting and forwarded to the full assembly for approval. Notice of the June 8, 2015 public hearing was mailed to the residents in the LID area and published in the newspapers required by CBJ 1510040. At the public hearing, affected property owners will have the opportunity to object to the formation of the district. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you, Madam Manager. And I would normally go to public hearing here, but I would like to have Mr. Watt or somebody from engineering give us a brief update so maybe the people will understand where we're at. We've gotten some email traffic that people don't quite understand where we're at with it. Mr. Watt.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And I understand the confusion. So what we have tonight is the formation of a local improvement district to pave the neighborhood. And provided that there was enough support in the neighborhood, the city and the neighborhood would partner together in that paving project, and we would move together through the public permitting and design process. And that would eventually go to the Planning Commission, and then we would have a project and go build it. The residents would contribute to the paving. And it's a little bit of a chicken and egg problem in that while we have the residents' attention about the paving, you know, we wanted to get their input on other things so that when we went through that permitting and design process, we would know how they felt. So we asked them an advisory question on street lighting, because street lighting is always, some people like it and some people don't. And we wanted to have that information before, you know, assuming that the paving LID was approved. We wanted to have that sense of the neighborhood before we went to the Planning Commission. And so that's where we are. I mean, I think our general feeling is we'd like to do a project that is harmonious with what the neighborhood wants. That said, I think you need to give it a chance to run through the commission process, because people may come and say, I think we need lighting at a particular intersection, or there might be a circumstance where it's merited. It is pretty clear that by about a 2-to-1 margin, the neighborhood is opposed to continuous lighting throughout the neighborhood. So That's, I think, hopefully that explains the situation. So before you, you've got the formation of the LID, which is the cost-sharing vehicle of paving of the road, and the formation of that partnership between the neighborhood and the city to move forward. If other things come in, the Planning Commission can make recommendations, and then ultimately the Assembly can choose to follow those recommendations or not, and fund those recommendations or not. So in the end, the final scope of the project will be an Assembly decision.
Any questions for Mr. Watt, Ms. Crane?
So when this goes to the Planning Commission, will the question of lighting be an open one, or are you going to make a recommendation regarding lighting when it goes to the Planning Commission?
So when we bring it to the Planning Commission, we're not going to propose lighting. That's not to say that some number of neighbors or maybe a planner looking at the project might comment that it's appropriate in a particular area, but as a core part of the project, we're not going to propose it.
Thank you.
Any other questions, Mr. Watt? All right. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
And now I will open it up to public comment, and our first person signed up is Mr. Sean Walker from Steelhead Street.
Hi.
Hi. Come on up. Don't be scared of us. We're working guys. Yeah.
Family.
Family. Hi. Welcome.
Well, I was...
give us your name.
I'm Shane Walker. I live on 4998 Steelhead, which is the second house on the right side. I was opposed to the LID to begin with, but since the majority voted on it, there's a few extra things that the original engineer presented to us that I really wanted to make sure was considered, and that is the street lighting and the paved walkways on the side. You know, it's chip sealed right now, which puts some speed bumps on the road. If you were a member of the neighborhood, you would notice that people drive very fast down the neighborhood. And once you smooth the road out, you're going to see people going a little faster. I have a a 6-month-old daughter and a 5-year-old daughter that, you know, I'm really concerned about because of changing this around and not having the street lights and walkways. So, again, I was opposed to it, but now that the majority has voted, I just wanted to say, yeah, I'm really for the street lights and the walkways. But anyway, I won't waste any more of your time. Sorry.
Thank you, sir. Let's see if there's any questions for Mr. Walker. Seeing none, thank you very much, sir. We'll move to Ms. Carla Hart. Good evening, Carla.
Thank you. My name is Carla Hart. I live at 4950 Rin Drive. I, too, was opposed to the LID because I, too, appreciate the natural speed bumps of the chip seal. I live towards the beginning of Rin Drive, and as the prior person stated, people who are going further into the neighborhood like to drive fast and would like to drive faster if the design is going to allow that. I will be working a lot with the planning process to try and get speed controls put into the neighborhood, but I would very much like to see street lighting taken out of this particular, whatever this is called, ordinance, because, as mentioned, 2-1 who were surveyed opposed the lighting, and if we have lighting in there, then it's going to be an issue. And if we design the street well without lighting, we can have a safe street for people to walk on. If you have episodic lighting, what happens is that your eyes become blinded with the light, and then you have a really dark stretch you go into and you can't actually see, and then you have more lighting. So episodic lighting, as somebody who walks a lot, is really not very comfortable and not very safe. And I don't remember the continuous lighting being the wording on the questionnaire when we got it. Rory said that it said 2-1 opposed to continuous lighting. I just remember it being, do you favor street lighting? But I would ask you to take that out of the resolution. It'll save the city money, which is good in this day and age. And I think we can do this well without the lighting. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hart. Are there any questions for Ms. Hart? Seeing none, thank you very much, ma'am. And next one is, I think, Jerry Landry. Good evening.
Good evening. Jerry Landry, 10236 Heron Way. I specifically came out when I read the ordinance for maybe added, including street lighting. Absolutely opposed to it. It's a rural area, and that's really my only concern. During the planning process, I'll echo some of the speed concerns, but initially, I just want to have street lighting removed. That's all.
Thank you, sir. Are there any questions for Mr. Landry? Seeing none, thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else in the public wish to comment on that, this ordinance? Seeing none, public comments is closed, and I will open it up to assembly action. Mr. Nan Curvis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move adoption of Ordinance 2015-28, and I would ask for unanimous consent, and I would also like to speak to my motion.
Thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Nan Curvis.
The folks in the audience also, I think, have an opportunity to look at this ordinance on page 2, lines 6 through, actually line 9 through 11. It says additional potential project amenities may be added. Doesn't say they will, doesn't say they won't, say they may be added. And I like the fact that that's still on the table because the neighbors might change their mind. Probably not. I'm not one in favor of streetlights in my neighborhood either. I like it dark when it's dark out, light when it's light out. But who knows? They might decide that they want something like that. But there's nothing in there that says that they're going to do that. And I'd also like to briefly speak about the speeding. We get this on almost everybody that comes in that gets an LID that is concerned with speeding. And in my prior career, I can tell you that we would go out and do directed enforcement in those areas. And oftentimes the people that are speeding in those areas, as Ms. Hart pointed out, are the people that live in that area more often not than anybody else. Those are the folks that are speeding. And I think that, unfortunately, is sort of a dual-edged sword that comes with repaving, is that some folks will have a tendency to want to go faster, and I think that's part of the neighborhood and issue that you can address, and it's also something the chief police is in the back of the audience as well, and if you think they're speeding, I would get a hold of the chief, and they can do some directed enforcement out there like I just talked about. However, more often than not, what you will get are your neighbors, and you can often get a little farther by speaking to the neighbors and seeing what can go on there. But I think with the vote, I think it was 2-1 in favor of the LID. I'm going to support this ordinance. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Anybody else? Mr. Nankur was asked for unanimous consent. Does that stand? Any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Thank you. We'll move on to, if the clerk would read the title for Ordinance 2015-29.
An ordinance amending the signs code and providing for a penalty.
Thank you. Manager's report.
This ordinance would amend CBJ Chapter 4945, the signs code, by changing violations of the code from criminal infractions to civil violations and by amending the currently imposed staggered penalty 25, 50, and 100 to a $50 per day per offense penalty with a 15-day grace period. After noticing the decline in sign compliance and the inherent disincentive for compliance in the existing code, $25 to put up a sign without a permit versus $50 to apply for a permit. The Historical Resources Advisory Committee initiated this amendment. The HRAC unanimously voted to support the amendment at its December 9, 2014 meeting. The Title 49 Subcommittee also unanimously supported the change at its January 27, 2015 meeting. At its meeting on April 14, 2014, the Planning Commission voted to recommend approval of the amendment to the full assembly. And a correction to what I said earlier, it's the change would go to a $500 per day per offense with a 15-day grace period. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you, Madam Manager. Public comment. Is there anybody from the public who wishes to comment on this? We have two signed up. Anybody else? So if we can have the first, Sean McMahon, come up and give us testimony. Shauna, excuse me.
Good evening. My name is Shauna McMahon. I live at 531 Park Street. I should note that I am a member of the Historic Resources Advisory Committee. But one comment I want to emphasize in this proposal is the fact that it's a correctable offense. A lot of people see the numbers and they don't realize that there is a correctable period for this. And I feel it's a good opportunity to show how important we feel the look and feel of our downtown is. Thank you.
All right. Are there any questions for Ms. McMahon? Seeing none, thank you very much, ma'am. And the next one is Michael Tripp.
Mr. Mayor, Assembly, thank you. I think it might be, I would ask if the body would allow for Ms. Laura Boyce to do the presentation prior to my testimony and perhaps Mr. Harris's testimony as well. It kind of lays out the groundwork for this. If not, I'm more than willing to proceed ahead.
You're ready to go, so proceed ahead.
I'm ready to go. Okay, you got it.
If we don't have any questions for them, we won't have any.
No problem. Obviously, I sit here as a member of the Juneau business community as a property owner in downtown Juneau, and as a member of HREC, as the chair of the HREC subcommittee on signage, and we bring to you tonight this proposal to increase these fees on non-conforming and non-permitted signs. And I would like to ask this committee continue to focus on those two words. Because we're not asking for they're big numbers. We understand that there's been some sticker shock as far as raising the fees from a non-conforming sign from $25 that kind of filters its way through an entire several month season to $500 per day. It sounds like a big jump, but please keep in mind that this is for non-conforming, non-permitted signs. There is a cure period built into this proposal. It works in Skagway, which we use as our guide, and we feel that it would help with some of the visual, for lack of a better word, pollution that we see happening around the borough and specifically within the historic district at downtown Juneau. So that's kind of the beginning and end of it for me. Thank you.
Mr. Tripp, thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Tripp?
Mr. Mayor?
Yes. Ms. Troll?
Yes, thank you. I just would like some understanding as to why it is 500 and not 250, or slightly less number, but still effective as a deterrent.
Madam Manager?
Can you explain that?
Answer for that, or you want staff to come up?
I would ask since he's the chair of the HREC, it was their recommendation, and so I think it's best to have them say why.
Mr. Tripp.
Again, we use Skagway as our guideline, Mistral. In answer to your question, Skagway, uses $500 per day as their fee structure, and it seems to work brilliantly there. I have a business in Skagway. I have for 16 years as well. And we don't, in the city of Skagway, we don't see the same things happening, especially with regards to the historic district there that we do here. It's a very good deterrent. I don't think it's meant to be a revenue generator for the city of Skagway. I think it's meant to be just what it is. It's a deterrent. If you mess up, if you put up a sign, you don't cure it, it will cost you.
Thank you, Mr. Tripp. Anything else, Ms. Troll?
No, thank you.
Anyone else? Ms. Frank?
Well, I don't know whether probably this should be directed at Ms. Boyce. What kind of education are we going to be doing for businesses downtown so that they know this is coming? With it, and do we really think is 15 days notice enough for people to be able to? I'll ask Mr. Tripp. Do you think 15 days notice is enough time for businesses to get the notice and be able to remedy the situation?
I'll leave the first part of your question to Ms. Boyce, because I think that is a part of her presentation as far as the outreach to businesses that that operate within the CBJ here. As far as your second question, 15 days. Again, we do use the Skagway model a lot because it is an ironclad model that does seem to work. Skagway provides for 7 days for a cure. And so we, you know, when we were doing the debate on this, we went to 15 days. You've got to draw a line in the sand on all of these debates, as we understand in this system of making guidelines and rules. And I think that, I mean, staff does a really good job, in my opinion, of getting permits for signage done in that time frame. We just recently went through doing Tram Plaza, which has probably 15 or 16 different signs spread across 5 different businesses on a building that probably takes up, and I'm guessing, but it probably has more linear footage on Franklin Street than any other building in downtown Juneau. And, you know, we applied for that permit. It came back in a very timely fashion. The 15 days wouldn't have been an issue. Last year we did Alaska Pacific, which is a kind of a unique building. It falls within the historic district and out of the historic district. And that process was probably 7 or 8 days. So, yeah, I think 15 days is plenty of time for a business to cure a notice of noncompliance.
Thank you.
Any other questions of Mr. Tripp? Ms. Boyce, if you want to come up and answer the first part of the question.
Good evening, and for the record, I'm Laura Boyce, staff with the Community Development Department, and I'm also the staff liaison to the Historic Resources Advisory Committee. We send a list to all governors letting them sign permits are and also there's a requirement for seasonal display windows during the off season. So we regularly send those letters. This year we sent our letter to all the businesses in the district. We've presented to the DIG, the Downtown Improvement Group, twice. And today we walked the downtown district and handed out more sign permit reminder cards and to call our office for information. And then if this is adopted, we'll send a letter out as well informing people. We're also creating a visual signage book so people can look through it and see what kinds of signs would be approved, what kinds wouldn't. Historic different district standards are a little different, though. It depends on the historic building period, et cetera. But this ordinance would apply borough-wide, and there are different sign rules for borough-wide versus the historic district. But we do plan to educate the public.
Ms. Crane.
So what do we do about compliance? I've heard comments that downtown is widely out of compliance with the sign ordinance. That it's so it's gotten that way over time. After the permits are issued, are we going to continue to have somebody observe borough-wide the signs and make sure that there is compliance with this?
How compliance works in our department currently is that we're complaint-driven. So our office gets complaints about signs or whatever kind of issue, compliance issue, and we research it and follow up on it as needed. The historic district is unique. The city offices are downtown. We're in the downtown. We see these signs. But it's also the highest concentration of businesses in the city. We see the number of sign violations there. And the Historic Resources Advisory Committee, they're committed to the historic district and the integrity of the district. So they also report back to us about sign violations.
Are you, do you have another question, Ms. Craig?
No. I'll give others a chance.
So I guess I would ask, what type of signage are we having the most trouble with? Are we
the kind of signs that are being put up without permits? Right now, it costs $50 to apply for a sign permit. To get a ticket, it's $25. There's a built-in disincentive into the system already. It's cheaper it's less expensive to put up a sign without a permit than it is to get a properly permitted sign. So we'd like to at least fix that disincentive.
So are you telling me that signs that are being made professionally are being made out of the parameters of the sign ordinance and just being put up without a sign permit?
The first part of that, I don't know, because they haven't submitted the materials for us to review to see if it's in compliance. There's been no permit applied for.
Are there any of those signs out there?
In the historic district, yes. To answer your question, there are some signs that you see that are up that would not meet standards for the historic district.
So is it more of a problem of having somebody that can look at it and enforce it rather than, I can see where maybe these canvas signs that are temporary, or I can see where those might go up off the wall, you know, and just be up there all of a sudden. But a sign that's made professional, you would think that a professional person has looked at it and built it to whatever our code is and to the size that the code requires.
We do have someone in the audience who I believe is going to speak to this issue that is a professional sign maker, but I think he might attest to this, that many signs are ordered out of town and are sent here for the businesses to put up. They don't check with our rules. Sometimes I will get calls from sign companies in Anchorage to ask what the standards are, but not in many cases.
Okay. Ms. Becker? Yeah,
thank you, Mr. Mayor. So a painting that's on the window, do you call that a sign or not a sign?
Is it in the historic district or is it...
But
outside.
You said this was going to be, you said it's going to be district-wide. The sign ordinance will be district-wide, so it doesn't really, does it really matter?
It does. There are different standards that apply to the historic district.
Okay, let's say it's the historic district then.
I would have to look at the specific rules, but if something is affixed to the outside of the window, we would consider it a sign. Artwork, I'm not sure. That's a fuzzy area that the Historic Resources Advisory Committee is dealing with right now, specifically murals we're talking about. So artwork is a bit of a gray area. If it incorporates commercial wording, it would obviously be considered a sign.
Go ahead, Ms. Becker.
Thank you. I think someone told me, or I read this, and I don't know if it's true, that only 25% of a window can be covered by anything. Is that true?
I would have to look in the code. In the historic,
I don't know what he was saying, but he was answering.
It depends.
It depends. Okay, he was answering my questions.
Okay.
It depends. Okay.
In the historic district, I believe it says up to 10% of the windows can be covered in a sign, and then anything over that 10% needs to count against the total allotment of square footage of signage for the building.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Is there a presentation coming, or?
No.
There's not?
No.
Okay. Oh, I thought it was too.
Unless you guys need a presentation, there wasn't going to be a presentation, no.
Well,
she has slides.
Yeah.
I do have slides if you'd like.
Well, I thought that's what, okay. Was up there.
Do you want a presentation, assembly members?
Yes, please.
Yes, please.
Thank you. Ms. Boyce?
All right, thank you. A little bit of background that you heard from Michael Tripp. The Historic Resources Advisory Committee is the group that proposed this change. They've noticed that the historic district downtown, that the appearance is changing. They formed a signage subcommittee. That committee, there are two big tasks that they proposed. The first one was to look at this enforcement fee. The second, they want to look at signage rules overall. They know there are some fuzzy areas, some issues with the rules, and they'd like to tackle that next. But this was the first thing they thought that they could tackle. Let's see. So as you know, and for the audience members, the current structure is a staggered system. A sign violation is a criminal offense or an infraction in the current setup. The first offense is $25, then $50, then there's a $100 fine with a court appearance. The staggered system is especially in the historic district where we have the seasonal business people that come into town. By the time we go through the staggered system, offense system with them, it's the end of the season. They close up shop and leave town, and we've had those signs up all summer long. So part of the change that the HRAC proposed is that we model Skagway's system, which is $500 a day per offense. As Mr. Tripp said, they have a 7-day window to come into compliance. In this scenario, we're proposing 15 days. And within that 15 days to come into compliance, which is as easy as taking down the signs, if you can remedy that situation in 15 days, that $500 fine is waived. So the proposed language is that it will change from a criminal infraction to a civil fine. And the issue with it being a criminal infraction is that you would have to issue the citation to a person that you see putting up the sign right then, which may be the employee and not necessarily the business person that gave them the direction to put the signs up, or you may not be giving the ticket to the correct person. So with it being a civil offense, and Ms. Mead, please correct me if I'm stating this wrong, the business owner would have the fine attached to them. And then, of course, the city manager's office would hear appeals of these fines, which is the system we're moving towards, moving from criminal to civil. And this is the proposed language in code. Title III would also change to list the violations in that chapter, as well as the sign chapter in Title 49. I covered that already. I've already stated about the disincentive, but to reiterate, a sign permit application is $50. That's for the first two signs. Then it's $20 for each additional sign. A sign violation ticket is $25 for the first offense. As stated in the beginning, the HRAC supported this change. The Title 49 subcommittee of the Planning Commission also supported it. And the Planning Commission voted to recommend approval to the Assembly. We have some pictures from previous seasons of signs that are out of violation. These are affixed to the window in the historic district, therefore they need a permit. This says suicide sale, not necessarily maybe appropriate. This was another one of a sign that did not receive a permit either, also affixed to a window. and no signs would not meet historic district standards. Another shot of a building downtown with numerous signs on the building, none of which were permitted. There's, in this photo, there's an example of an Alaska banner waving sign. Those are specifically not allowed in the historic district. There's many other signs on that building that have not received permits.
Can you go back? Which one was not allowed in the district? The flag, feather flag?
Yes, that's
oh, okay,
the term.
Feather.
Thank you,
okay.
The feather flag sign.
Sorry.
More photos of buildings that have not received permits. Just to give you an idea of the types of sign violations we're seeing downtown. There's, it's difficult to see, but there are signs above the windows that are placed without permits. And
they're placed without permits, you say? Or
yes.
Can I ask a question?
No, that should not be.
If that had a permit, would it be all right? If they had gone down to get a permit, would that have been an okay sign?
There are a number of signs above the storefront windows. There are four on each side. Sorry. All of these. Some may meet historic district standards. They would need to be reviewed, and in this case, we probably would have brought a number of them to the Historic Resources Advisory Committee for input. And that's it for my presentation.
Okay. Any other questions? Ms. Crane.
Have you had input from the Downtown Business Association or from the Chamber? Since they would represent businesses outside of downtown.
We presented to the Downtown Improvement Group twice. A number of questions were asked at that meeting. I didn't receive specific feedback. I haven't heard from the chamber necessarily. Maybe my director has.
Thank you.
Anything else? Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I guess I have two questions. I don't know whether to direct them to Ms. Boyce or the city attorney. The first would be I need some help understanding who would be subject to a citation if we have a lease. Is it the building owner or the business owner?
It would be the business owner, although it depends how the ordinance is worded about who ultimately has responsibility.
I'm looking at the one in front of us, please.
The chapter, the signs code chapter. And who it would be dictated by who is responsible to apply for the permit. Just to quickly follow up on that, if I may, a business owner who's renting a space from the building is able to apply for a sign permit.
Okay.
As a lessee.
With signature from the property manager for the building the sign is going on.
Actually,
am
I need
right?
To confirm that.
Mr. Keel, you had the floor. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm satisfied that this isn't changing who would get cited. But it would be good to have an authoritative answer at some point here. And then this one definitely for the city attorney. I am not clear on what the fine is on day 16. Because I get that if a citation issues, starts a 15-day clock, you can put up a better sign that complies, you can take down the sign that doesn't comply. If you don't, on your first citation, the fine shall be waived. If I guess, does the fine first kick in at $8,000? Is that what I'm understanding here? Day 16, you haven't done it.
No. The per day violation language, the way that that is interpreted and applied, is it's tied to a, in this case, not a conviction, but a judgment finding you responsible for the penalty. So if you're never found responsible to pay the fine, you never get to a second. In this case, we were very careful about how we worded the language with the waiver language, because if someone is cited and comes into compliance within 15 days, the penalty is waived, but the citation does not disappear, and that's to protect against someone taking down the compliance sign and for some reason putting up the non-compliance sign. That would be a second if there was a subsequent violation. But the penalty does not accrue every day during that 15-day period, no.
And if they take down the non-compliant sign on day 16, what is the penalty?
If they were to take down the non-compliant sign on the 16th, then technically they would have one day of violation.
Because the language here says the fine shall be waived if within 15 days of notice proof that it's been remedied is provided to the enforcement officer. So if that doesn't happen, no fine is waived, right?
Correct. It is up to the person who is cited to come to the enforcement officer and say, I fixed the problem. Here's proof that I fixed the problem, and the enforcement officer has the authority to waive the penalty amount.
So if and I apologize for the back and forth, Mr. Mayor, if the business owner does that and says, okay, on day 16, I fixed the problem.
Then there would be no violation. If it was done prior to the 15th day, they did it on the 16th day. Assuming that that actually occurred, it would be discretionary with the civil fine authority to waive that amount if there was substantial conformance, but technically, if someone did not fix the problem within 15 days, a fine would properly be due.
Got it.
Ms. Podolsky.
Sorry, I'm still on the same thing, because it says that each and every day during which a violation of this chapter is committed. So they're committing the violations for 16 days. Or are they only committing a violation for one day?
That language is not unique to this code section or even our code, and certainly not as a matter of law. The way that is interpreted and applied is with a conviction or with a judgment. So it could not be the situation where CDD hands someone a $500 ticket every single day, and on the 15th day they fix it, and the fee for the first one goes away, but they're responsible for $8,000 worth of fines. That does not kick in unless someone the way that it applied in Skagway's higher fee was tied to willful violations. So there was a slightly lower fee for non-willful violations that could go up to $500 in the case of willful and ongoing violations. And they included the per day per offense language in order to force enforcement or force compliance in the same way that we've done with criminal code, where we've done mandatory court appearances for third convictions. It's the same concept, but because this is something that we want to attach to the owner of the business, it's not a criminal violation. We're keeping it as a civil violation. Does that make more? Did I answer your question?
Good enough. Thank you.
Mr. Jones.
I was just trying to figure out if we're still under public comment and asking questions, or are we under discussion of the ordinance?
There's no motion.
Well, we just had a briefing from Ms. Boyce, and there were some questions on her statements. And so if we could just follow through with that, and then we'll take action on the ordinance and open it up for public comment. Okay. We're not on public comment yet.
Thank you.
I thought we had two people who publicly commented, and we had two
Sorry,
more on
I
the list.
Sorry, I made a mistake, and I did three, in fact, or two or three, whatever it was. We'll open it back up for public comment because I never closed it, and we will have anybody else who wishes to speak to us on this ordinance speak to us.
Okay. I will hold my comments till we're under discussion of the ordinance then.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Becker?
Do we have a compliance officer for this? Are we going to be able to get one? Do we? Does CDD have someone that?
The Community Development Department right now, we're complaint driven, and then the assigned complaint is assigned to the appropriate staff person, whether it's a building inspector or a planner, to research and help bring the person into compliance. So it's staff based at this point.
All right, any more questions for Ms. Boyce? Thank you very much. Anything else, Ms. Boyce?
Oh, thank you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. So if I could have a recommendation from the Assembly on moving this forward, or whichever, whoever wants to move or not move it. Ms. Becker?
I thought we still had public comment.
I'm going to have public comment on the ordinance as soon as I open it up. Okay. Yes, Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would move the Assembly approve ordinance serial number 2015-29, and I will speak against my own amendment when it comes, or my own motion when it comes up.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Ms. Becker?
I was going to move the ordinance.
Okay.
Thank you.
So we have before us serial number 2015-29. Is there anybody else in the public who wishes to speak to us on this ordinance? Please come up. Is there anybody else out there who wishes to speak to us on this ordinance? One other person? Okay. Yes, sir. Name and street.
My name is Don Harris, and I live at 640 Main Street. I am a member of the Historic Resources Advisory Committee. I am the vice chairman of that committee, and I am also on the signage subcommittee. So I've heard all of this back and forth ad nauseum. One of the things that I don't think has really been explained. Well, they talk about the staggered fine as it currently stands. You know, it says $25 for first offense, $30 for second offense, and then more money and $100 and then going to a court appearance for the third offense. What they didn't say is that there can be 30 days between each of these. So from the first offense to the final offense, it could be 90 days, which is, you know, a big chunk of, the summer. A couple of other things that I noticed. Like people said, it's cheaper to put up unpermitted signs and allow yourself to be fined. The big problem is that we do not have a compliance officer. We did have one for a while last year, and I don't know how long he was on, but it was a very short period of time. It may have been less than 3 weeks. And then when he left, there was nobody designated to do that other than, the generic staff thing. One of the things, that I think should be at least talked about is that the sign code is not rocket science. It is right here in the Downtown Historic District Design Standards and Guidelines, and it goes very, very tightly. I picked out some examples in one that came up. Total window and door sign area should not exceed the 10% of the storefront glass. Signs above the canopy have to relate to the building name or to the primary use of the building. Rooftop signs are not appropriate. And it also talks about what the signs are made out of. They like paint, but they don't like shiny. You know, it should be a flat kind of paint. There are, you know, pages and stuff about that. Appropriate sign types, canopy signs, facade-mounted signs, window or door signs, color schemes, size schemes. Anyone who wants to get a permit for a sign can go talk to people at the city, and they will go through this. They'll sit down and say, okay, what do you want? This is what you can have. And they say, well, you know, okay, maybe you can make it a little smaller. Or maybe you can put it somewhere else. People that permit the signs are not, you know, the enemy. They're just trying to help people, you know, obey the law. And, you know, I guess that's another thing. People talk about the $500 fine. And, you know, it's not that this thing, and they're upset about it. They say, okay, all of a sudden something that's legal isn't legal anymore. That's not true. It was illegal before. And you can avoid that $500 by taking it down or going down and talking about trying to get a permit for the site. I guess that's about all I wanted to say.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Harris? Thank you very much, sir. Thank Appreciate you. It. Mr. Miller, did I see your hand up back there?
You sure did.
Come on up.
Good evening. My name is Darryl Miller, and for the record, I own Commercial Signs and Printing right next door here. I'll try to make this as brief as possible. I think that I've been one of the only people that have been speaking out against this, at least publicly. I think you've received some letters from other business people, maybe not as persistent as I have been, maybe more. I'd like to try to break it down. I am in favor of this ordinance from the standpoint that CDD and the City and Borough of Juneau clearly needs to change it to a civil fine structure so that they can enforce the existing sign code. They obviously need to raise the fee to get rid of the disincentive and the probably decades-old analogy of it's far easier to get forgiveness in the City and Borough of Juneau for a sign infraction than permission. And that's how the sign and visual graphic system has been working throughout Juneau. There are tons of oversized banners throughout the community, not in the historic district, in the Mendenhall Valley, around Nugget Mall, in the hospital area. My favorite change tonight, if I were king, would be to strike section 49, 45, 270, and the text that relates strictly to sign materials from the civil fine structure. And I would, if you could do that, I would say adopt it and let CDD move on and try to clean up the historic district. I want to thank Laura for not showing any of my professionally made signs in her slide strip tonight. I do, though, when I look at slides and I see them and I instantly seeing them cast in a negative way, in a historical district description piece, and it's a building that's not in the historic district, one of the issues that I've been saying over and over and over again is that I'm a visual person who works in a visual trade and craft, and it is my belief that we, as industry leaders, as assembly members, as planning commission members, staff at CDD, I think we all should take a more visual approach to how we design and make changes and look at the big picture. When cruise ship passengers get off of that new dock or come down the gangplank from Panamax vessels in 2 years, and the millions of dollars are being spent, are we going to disembark them in a historic district, or are we going to make them weave through a maze of L.A. downtown before they hit the historic district? And I know I'm showing my age here, but I like my historic district. I could have moved my business to the Valley decades ago, but I like what I'm doing. I like the clients I have. I like working on historical signs. And that's why I'm right next door to City Hall. And if anybody wants to take a shot at me, now's your chance.
Any questions for Mr. Miller, Mr. Budaczewski?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Miller, you said you were against the ordinance, but then you went on to say you think we should change it to a civil fine and, you know, enforce the sign ordinance, essentially. So what do you object to?
Sign materials specifically.
Sign materials. Okay.
Sign materials. There, in 07 and 08, when there was a different staffing group of folks at CDD, we created as a community Chapter 10 is what I live by. It's also what Laura gets to live by because she's in charge of enforcing those permits. I cried up and down about the materials that were chosen, and they really put us back in the dark ages. Paintbrushes, paints, real lumber. It's really not about what the signs are made out of. It's what they look like. And when I've had discussions over Skagway fines, Skagway allows vinyl materials. They allow plastics. But it comes down to the permitting agency or group or body of people. They see a proof of that sign before it's hung up, and it either meets their standard of looking old or it doesn't. And that's what Juno's away from.
Okay, thank you. Just to be clear, this ordinance doesn't change any of the standards. You're talking about the standards. You're quibbling with what the standards are, and you want them to change. Right.
I said if I was king for the day and you could take care of .270 for me, I would be a very happy camper.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Questions for Mr. Miller? Thank you very much, Mr.
Thank
Miller.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else on the public who wishes to comment on this ordinance? Seeing none, public comment is closed. Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I spent several times after the Planning Commission and several times talking with Mr. Miller. I think I spent about a half hour with the attorney on this ordinance, and I spent an hour with CDD staff. And I'm still not convinced that I will vote for this. I think what the HRAC is doing, the HRAC committee that they have formed to look at the sign standards and talking with CDD about the sign standards, knowing that the Front and Franklin group is talking about sign standards and lighting, I get a feeling that this ordinance is sort of getting ahead of a consensus about what signs ought to be, and so that concerns me. The other thing that concerns me, while there were some questions and maybe some clarification, this is not a per-day fine. This is only a per-day fine if CDD gets out on the street and writes a violation each and every day. If they write a violation each and every day, it's a fine each and every day. But if you write a violation on Monday, and you come back 17 days later, and they haven't complied, and you write a violation on the 17th day, that's a fine. If you wait another 30 days, that's only the third offense. That is not a fine between day 18 and day 30. That's how it was explained to me by the attorney. It's not a per-day fine. This is a statement in here, and it's a statement in the presentation that is not correct. And it gives a false sense that, you know, we're creating this massive disincentive where somebody's going to be fined $500 a day for 25 days because they're out of compliance. That's just not the case. If CDD doesn't get out of their office, doesn't get out of their building, doesn't get down on the street, and doesn't cite them, it ain't going to happen. We got rid of the code compliance officer in the last budget round. And so it's the planners, it's the building officials or whoever. In my discussions with CDD, I talked about education and enforcement, the questions that Ms. Crane asked. And I was hoping that they were going to talk about, you know, we pass this ordinance, the next day they're going to tell everybody, you've got 30 days. Because they know which signs are out of compliance. They know which signs aren't permitted. They can go to those people and say, if you're not in this office getting a permit, when this ordinance takes effect in 30 days, we're going to be on your doorstep fining you or citing you with a violation and see how many people actually come in before that 30 days, before this. And I didn't hear that tonight. I'm sort of disappointed that that wasn't part of their enforcement. It was. They talked about the education. They talked about the letters, and I appreciate that. The fact they went out today and gave out more things today, I think, is an improvement. But I didn't hear the forcefulness that I was hoping to say, you know, we're serious about this. We're going to talk about a $500 fine. You know, you need to come in. We will streamline our permitting process. We will do whatever in this next 30 days. Because if you ask them, they'll say, well, most of the signs on South Franklin, you know, most of the stores have at least one illegal sign. There's confusion over the sign. If you put a sandwich board out on your sidewalk and it's not attached to your building, and attached means a chain hook to it, you're not in compliance. You need to have a permit to put that sandwich board out. But if you put that sandwich board inside the doorway, or walking by, I can see it, that's not a violation because it's inside the doorway, and we only talk about inside, you know, that out in the public. When Ms. Crane asked about signs and windows, if you put a sandwich board behind the window, that's not illegal. If you take that information and put it on a butcher block or butcher paper and you attach it on the outside of your window, you have to have a permit. That doesn't make any sense to me because the public doesn't understand that. They walk by and see this sandwich board behind the window and say, ah, that's ugly, that ought to be illegal, and it's not. You put it on the outside of the window, not chained to the building, that has to have a permit. To me, the issue of enforcement, how to enforce it, the interpretation of the enforcement, the education involved, I just don't know if we're there yet to be putting a $500 fine on a business and giving the false impression that that is a cumulative, and it, unless CDD gets out of their office and cites them. We all are concerned about getting subdivision permits out and getting housing permits out and getting construction permits out and getting platting out and all this kind of stuff. So they're not going to have the time to be walking the street and doing siting and that in the historic district, let alone all the offices are down here dealing with the Mendenhall Mall and the Nugget Mall and all the stores out in the valley that, you know, you can drive by almost any day and see these butcher block signs up and these waiting signs and stuff attached to the buildings that don't meet the code. So despite having spent a lot of time talking with people, I'm just not convinced at this point that this is where we need to go today without a little better plan on education and enforcement. And so the way it stands now, I think I'm going to be a no vote. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Ms. Mead, would you straighten this all out on when the fines start, when they don't start, and all that again so that we are on the right track?
Sure, and I apologize because I didn't think that this was the issue, which apparently it was. So a citation carries with it a notice component. This is not a strict liability crime or civil violation. In order to provide someone with notice that they are violating city code, the vehicle for that is the citation. So a citation must be given to an individual, giving them notice that they are violating civil code, that is the enforcement mechanism, is the citation. That's in Chapter 3, where we talk about the civil fine code. And that's a general proposition of law. We can't provide for a strict liability crime just by stating in our code that it's a per-day, per-offense violation. The reason where that language comes from and how that language is used is to allow an enforcement authority to issue violations on a daily basis for an ongoing willful violation. So the EPA is very fond of that language. The federal government is very fond of that language. We have that language in our BEAR ordinance. The state uses that language. It allows us to write an ongoing citations, because that way you don't, for example, our current sign code ordinance, if someone gets a violation for violating the current sign code ordinance, there is no other action that can be taken until that citation is disposed of. So there was talk about a 30-day. I'm not sure it's a 30-day, but it has to go through the whole process. So someone, I think the 30-day comes from you have 30 days to pay your ticket to the CBJ before there's a default judgment process or there's further enforcement action. In the case of a third violation, when it's a mandatory court appearance, that can take quite a while to go through the court process. So that's where that language comes from, but the vehicle to let someone know that they are violating the code is with a citation. That is part of the enforcement process, a necessary part of the enforcement process.
Ms. Kvatachewski?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Okay, I need you get it. You give me a ticket, and I don't do anything. And on day 16, do I owe the city $500? And then if I still leave the sign up, you get another citation and I have 15 more days to not?
No. So this concept of waivable offenses or fixable tickets is something that is regularly used with traffic tickets. So we have these provisions with respect to failure to carry insurance, for example, where if you have a light out, you get a ticket from the officer. It's processed in the same way as all other tickets. But if you fix it within the timeline prescribed by ordinance, the ticket will be waived. It's the same concept. So you get a ticket on June 1 that you are violating the sign code ordinance. You do nothing. You lose the right to fix the ticket after the 15th day. You are required to pay the ticket. Is it 30 days? 20 days? I think it's 30 days.
Whatever.
You must pay the ticket within 30 days. The process for paying the ticket and what happens if you don't pay the ticket is the same as it is for all of our other civil fines, which is in Title III. That process hasn't changed. The 15 days only goes to your opportunity to get the fine waived.
Ms. Kvatachewski.
Just how much do I owe the city when...
16.
On day 16 and on day 17, I have to get another ticket, and then I owe the city $500 more? How do I accrue fines in this scenario?
Your first ticket is given to you on June 1. You do nothing. That $500 is due on June 30th. Let's say you're an egregious example. It's a willful violation. CDD has come and told you that you're in violation, and it's a horrible sign that we want down, and you're doing nothing. CDD could issue citations on day 16, 17. It doesn't make any sense to issue a second citation prior to the 15 days expiring, because once it's fixed, if you get a ticket on June 1 and you get a ticket every day until June 15, and by June 15 you fixed it, all of those tickets go away. It's a per-day violation, but the second offense does it. I see Mr. Akil's face,
no,
and the question I'm guessing that you're having is it says that for a second violation, but it's a second violation. You haven't been found liable for the first violation unless you fail to pay the ticket or you're found responsible by the civil fine officer who hears the tickets.
Go ahead.
Mr. Keith.
You're going to have to work me. You said that, but you're going to have to work me back through it, because I'm looking at the language here. Each and every day, during which a violation of this chapter is committed, permitted, or continued, shall be treated as a separate offense and subject the offender to separate charges and fines. So I appreciate that Mr. Jones has focused me in that you're going to need to have a CDD person write the day two ticket and the day three ticket. But it is the language here says on a first offense, the fine should be waived if.
If I go out tonight and hit the triangle bar and drive home and Chief Johnson there catches me, and I do that every day for the next 7 days, every day is a first DUI because I have not been convicted of DUI yet. I have not been convicted of a DUI yet.
we know who's going to follow
you. It is only with the conviction that the second DUI, the enhanced sentence, comes into play. So I would the mandatory minimum sentence that would be imposed for each of those separate violations, each time I drove drunk, would be the mandatory minimum for a first. That's the way this works.
Mr. Keel, follow up.
I'm trying to square that with the language, which says precisely the opposite. So that gives me pause. I guess it sounds to me, Mr. Mayor, and just maybe to speak to, since we do have a motion to adopt the ordinance, I think there's a lot of merit in the approach. I mean, I don't really imagine that CDD is going to go out for 15 days straight and write a series of tickets. If the goal is compliance, you give people a chance to comply. On the other hand, there are clearly still a lot of questions about this, and I continue to have a tremendous problem with the notion of the $500 fine ignoring a stop work order from the city. Is $100 the first time and $300 the second time. And we need to be deadly serious about those if, you know, there's an unsafe situation, we issue a stop. So I would move that we table this to our next regular assembly meeting.
Thank you. Mr. Keel, if we would just wait for your tabling and see if we have any more questions that the assembly wants answered by staff for the next time around, please.
Sure.
Ms. Crane, you're biting at the bit.
Two things here. I thought I was beginning to understand this. Let's say the 15 days has passed. Nothing has been done. Can you write a second ticket on the 16th day, or do you have to wait until after the 30th day when they have not paid the fine?
There's no obligation to wait. So the language that's missing from this code that is in place in the Skagway code, at least the Skagway changed its ordinance in 2014 to take out the dollar amounts, but the purpose of the enhanced $500 per day violation was for the willful ongoing violations. So the concept is that, yes, you can, CDD could write a second citation on the 15th day, on the 16th day, on the 17th day, they would all be first.
Okay.
But they can write one, yes.
Mr. Mayor.
Yes.
So I say if we're having this much difficulty with this and understanding exactly what it is that we're going to pass, then I agree with Mr. Keel that we need some more clarification here, because I do not know how we could expect someone else to understand this.
Are there any other examples that you want spelled out to us for the next go around if we vote to table this tonight?
I guess the only thing I really thought I understood this. I don't know. I'm getting very confused by listening to this, but I want to know how far off I am on this. This is how I read it anyway. Day one, I've been given a ticket because I have all these terrible signs that are not in compliance. And I'm told at that point, this ticket is going to be paid if you do not have this fixed in 15 days. So I'm holding that ticket. I have it for 15 days. on the 16th day, I walked down to, maybe be nice it's on the 5th day, but let's say it's the 16th day, I walk down and I say, I have fixed it. And you say, fine. The 16th day comes, I've done nothing. You come to me and you say, let me see, and there is nothing. I now have that $500 ticket to pay, and I start paying every day until I'm done.
No.
No. So that's where I lost it, huh?
Okay. So the
Okay, so where did I end up getting it?
The $500 per day violation doesn't kick in unless CDD is giving you a new citation every day.
I'm sorry, say that again.
The $500 per day language is there to allow CDD to issue you a new citation every day. If you come in on the 20th day with proof that you fixed it within the 15-day period from when you first received your violation, that's waived.
That's
because
fine.
It's not the proof, it's the fact that you fixed it within the 15 days. The payment's not due until the 30th day under our civil fine ordinance. The 15-day doesn't change the date of the payment due. It's a time period within which you can show that your violation has been fixed.
Okay, so you're just saying that if I can prove on the 15th day I had it done, I may not get to you till the 20th, but as long as you have proof at the 15th I did it, there's no more fines going on. Well, that makes sense. But if I don't prove it to you, I'm going to get a fine on the 17th, the 18th, the 19th, and so forth.
You could.
Only if CDD writes the physical ticket.
Let's say they will. And
Ms. White.
Okay. I still think I'm tracking with what law is saying, so I just want to kind of play the devil's advocate. Let's just pretend I sell $15,000 widgets in my downtown store. So you tell me I have to take down my ugly tarp-looking banner, and so you write me the ticket. But I decide I'm going to outsmart you by just taking it down, and then after you go away, I'm going to put it back up. Then you're going to come and take it down, and we're going to play this game. I would think that is when you come into the point where you would write the $500 citation every day, and that's why you want to have the teeth behind it. Did I at least track it that far? I mean, I still feel like I'm keeping up, but at what point would you actually hit $500 a day? I think it would be if somebody was just willful and snotty about it.
So when I was in private practice, we represented Skagway, and they had a horrible problem with their historic district. Mm-hmm. I think the then city manager liked to refer to it as the Alaskan Tijuana, he used to call mm-hmm. it. And there were many attempts to try to rein in that very commercial atmosphere in the downtown historic corridor. And one of the problems that they had were the vendors who found it easier to pay fines than to comply because their fines had no teeth. The language that they used in the hawking ordinance, the language in the sign code that talked about the willful ongoing violations were to get at those vendors who took every opportunity they could take to get around the law. That's where the language originated from. That was the intent behind it. It wasn't to cite someone every single day for a 30-day period and get $500 every day out of them, which is why the willful language was included in the ordinance. If you were to put up a sign that's in violation of the sign code and take it down every day and put it up again, as Ms. Boyce explained, they are a complaint-driven office. So if someone were to call in every day on you that your sign, you have a sign up that violated the code and CDD went out every day and told you to take it down and you refused to take it down, they could begin citing, they could cite you every day for having a sign in violation of the code.
Okay. So I didn't. Thank you.
Anything else that we want to know about before we take action on this next go around? Mr. Keel, will you make your motion to table and the reason why?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So my motion is to table ordinance serial number 2015-29 to our next regular assembly meeting.
Thank you. And Mr. Keel, your reasoning is getting a straight answer on the $500 fines every day?
I will say an answer that I can understand. I'm sure it was straight, and I couldn't track it. I'm not ready to vote on this yet.
Okay. Is there any objections to tabling this ordinance, Mr. Jones?
No objection to tabling. I guess as I listen more to Ms. Mead and talking about Skagway, I guess I'm trying to understand how this ordinance got to us. In a state that seems to not mirror as close to Skagway as possible, and maybe that needs to be looked at as well. That egregious, willful, however that works out, but this has got to be better understood by us and much easier for CDD to enforce.
Thank you. The motion is to table till the next meeting. Is there any objection?
Yes. I would like to object.
Would you like to speak to your objection?
I would very much like to speak to that objection. I feel that the historical committee worked on this, and if we can put this through, we've got something with some teeth. It's not perfect, but we are in the height of our tourist season, and those buildings downtown, it looks worse than Cabo San Lucas right now, with all those ugly banners and everything. And I mean, we're just the jewelry stores, we're just the laughing stock of that industry because we don't enforce anything. I think what Law presented made sense. I think it might not be quite perfect, but if we don't do something now, we're not going to have something until the cruise ships are gone and ready to come back again.
Thank you, Ms. White. Anybody else? We have an objection to it. Seeing no one else, could you read the roll, please? And a yes vote is to table till next meeting, and a no vote is not to table. We still open for us.
Okay. Mr. Keel?
Yes.
Mr. Nankervis?
No.
Ms. Troll?
Yes.
Ms. White?
No.
Ms. Becker?
No.
Ms. Crane?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Ms. Gladyszewski?
Yes.
Mayor Sanford?
Yes.
Motion to table carried.
Ms. Mead.
Would you like me to take a stab at adding some clarifying language as to the two issues that... that were two main issues that were raised to bring to the next meeting?
Yes.
Yes, please.
I would appreciate it.
We've got to have clarification, otherwise we're going to keep sending this on the road, I think so.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes, Ms. Troll?
Thank you. If I can respond to Ms. Mead's question, where I was having problems tracking is getting to the willful ongoing violation. I didn't see language in this ordinance that was trying to get to that intent. Instead, I saw, I just got confused about the citation timing and the offense, and I'm all for getting at that willful ongoing violation, but had problems grasping that was what this was addressing.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Troll. Is there any other questions you want clarified, Ms. Troll?
That's it for right now, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Do you have enough input, Ms. Mead?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we will move forward to Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Mr. Murray. Sorry to belabor this point. I was wondering if it would be the appropriate time to have staff also speak about the concerns Mr. Miller brought up about sign materials. Thank you. That was the word.
Well, we're not changing that part of the ordinance.
Nope,
at all,
so. I know that. But since we're all confused about everything else, is that the appropriate time to look at that or not?
Ms. Boyce, CDD, have any thoughts on that, or the city manager?
Yes, thank you. As I mentioned in the beginning, the signage subcommittee of the Historic Resources Advisory Committee, the second wave of what they want to do is look at changes in the code. And we've worked with Daryl Miller over the years. And luckily, he was appointed to the HRAC tonight. So we get to work with him closely on making changes to the signage rules. We know there are issues. We know there are materials out there that will meet the intent of the standards. But we need to play with the language in the code to get us there.
Thank you. That was good to hear.
But that's another iteration.
That's yes, correct.
Down the road, not this ordinance specifically. Okay. Anything else on this topic? Okay, I'm going to step out here, and we're going to go to the next topic.
No.
Yay.
If we could go to item D, Madam Clerk, could you please read ordinance title 2015-30?
An ordinance authorizing the manager to lease approximately 1.31 acres located between the Juneau Arts and Culture Center and Centennial Hall to the State of Alaska for employee parking.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Madam Manager, staff report.
In 2009, resolution serial number 2535 authorized the manager to enter into a lease agreement with the state for the area between the Juneau Arts and Culture Center and Centennial Hall for employee parking for 1 year with 4 one-year renewals. The last renewal is set to expire on June 30, 2015. The state of Alaska is requesting a new lease for 1 year with 4 one-year renewals. The current fair market value of the site is $122,760, which is based on 155 parking spaces. The state manages and provides winter maintenance of the leased area. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you, Madam Manager. Is there anybody from the public who wishes to comment on ordinance serial number 2015-30? Seeing no public comment, I will close public comment and move to assembly action. Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move adoption of ordinance serial number 2015-30 and ask unanimous consent.
Are there any objections? Mr. Jones.
Just for a question.
Yes, sir.
The last statement in the manager's report says the state manages and provides winter maintenance of the leased area. It's usually spring when the potholes show up. Do they patch the potholes? Is that also maintenance, or do they only plow it in the winter and we're responsible for maintaining the asphalt and the potholes?
I will ask Mr. Cheney to come up and answer that, please. Mm-hmm.
The maintenance of the surface of the... Yes. Maintenance of the parking service is provided by the City of Juneau. So if there's a pothole, our Public Works Department has been pretty good about fixing them.
So the winter, if I might, Mr. Mayor, the winter maintenance is plowing.
Yeah,
all other right. Maintenance of that parking is paid for by the city. Is that built into the cost of the lease, or is the lease only based on a percentage of the fair market of the land?
Well, we need to provide the surface to park on. That's what we're leasing. So that's part of our maintenance costs, and it's absorbed within that lease structure. And that's about it.
Maybe it's included and maybe it's not, Mr. Jones.
I understand it, Mr. Mayor.
It's me.
On page 2 of the ordinance under maintenance,
oh.
The current language of the ordinance, so if you adopt this ordinance tonight, these would be the essential terms of the lease agreement, and that provides for all maintenance to be done by the state. So if that's not the case and not the intent, then that needs to be amended.
So, Mr. Mayor, then I guess my question continues.
Go ahead and ask again, Mr. Jones.
Does the lease require... lines 22 and 23 to be enforced, or is the manager's statement of winter maintenance is all that's there. And Mr. Cheney stated that we, Public Works, patches the potholes. So I guess I'm trying to, what's the right deal?
Who on staff wants to answer that?
I would defer it.
Not having, so what has been in place up until this year was a license agreement, revocable by the CBJ on an annual basis. The terms of that are different than what's showing up in this lease agreement. This lease agreement, our understanding was that maintenance was to be provided by the state, and that historically snow removal has been done by the state. That I do not think historically, according to Mr. Cheney, potholes and that sort of ongoing maintenance was done by the CBJ.
And you're correct. Public Works has done the pothole fixing over the past 5 years that I know. Mm-hmm. Just so you're correct. Mr. Jones, go ahead.
I guess, can the Director of Public Works and Engineering answer the question about what he plans to do after July 1 if there's potholes?
Mr. Watt, come on up. You've heard the question. You're welcome to answer it.
Mr. Mayor, I have no history on the issue. I don't know what services have been provided in the past.
The state has done the striping in the past. We agreed to the striping plan in the past.
What about the paving?
I do not know about the paving.
Might I suggest that you get that question answered if this lease gets approved, which I assume it will, because I would hate to break my axle and not know who to call, because I've fallen in a few potholes over there.
Ms. Mead.
That's dictated by the ordinance. The ordinance leads the lease. So whether if you want the state to do all of that maintenance, that's what you would require as part of the ordinance. And if you want to maintain the potholes or fix the potholes, if you want the CBJ to continue to do that, then this one sentence needs to be amended to envision that.
Then I will remove my objections, and hopefully that the senator from our district can get the DOT to replace the potholes.
We're blushing.
And it's allergating bad again already. You're right. Mr. Keel.
Mr. Mayor, thank you. Certainly not looking to renegotiate the lease from the assembly table. I think staff has had a good working relationship with the state of Alaska. So let me ask the attorney, if we simply struck the first two words in D there, page 2, line 22, if we struck maintenance including, and it simply said under maintenance, snow removal should be the responsibility of the lessee, would that in fact leave open for staff to negotiate the terms of striping, pothole patching, paving, et cetera, with the state?
Yes, but just so I don't know if Mr. Cheney has already negotiated that. This language comes from the department. I don't come up with this. So that might have already been negotiated, and that's where this language comes from. If it hasn't been and you want to give him the authority to negotiate everything other than snow removal, then I would just say we strike we modify D to read winter maintenance or snow removal, winter maintenance shall be the responsibility of the lessee, and leave the question of maintenance open for negotiation.
Mr. Cheney, anything?
We're willing to do the will of the assembly on this issue. We've been providing the maintenance of the service in the past. Previously, the state had structured this agreement, so we were changing it this time around so that we're structuring the agreement, and this is language we came up with. But if you would like something different, we're happy to do it differently.
Thank you, Mr. Cheney. Mr. Jones, anything else?
No, Mr. Mayor.
Anybody else with questions? All right, so we have...
No.
But it's not a motion.
Have we moved this thing yet?
Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Keel moved as unanimous consent. I ask a question. I remove my objection.
Mr. Keel.
It sounds, Mr. Mayor, like I need to withdraw my request for unanimous consent and instead move
an amendment here. And my amendment would be that we begin subsection D there, page 2, line 22, with the word winter. So that D, maintenance, and it would read, winter maintenance, including snow removal, shall be the responsibility of the lessee. And just to speak to that amendment, I certainly think the land staff is taking the right approach to this. I would think that if winter maintenance has been the agreement, they can work out the terms of the rest on the most favorable terms to the city that they can negotiate, but that we ought not dictate it.
Thank you. Any comments on the amendment? Ms. Kladachevsky.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. But if the state is willing to do the all the maintenance, we should let them.
That was what I meant by most favorable terms.
So we have before us the amendment at line 22. Is there any objections to that? Seeing none, so ordered. Mr. Keel, we're back. Mr. Keel. You made the proposal to move this forward and adopt it.
As meant.
Mr. Jones or anybody else have anything to say? Is there any objections? We are done and have approved serial number 2015-30. Madam Clerk, we'll move forward to ordinance 2015-31. Please read your title.
An ordinance authorizing a capital improvement by agreement for the paving of a portion of Eagle Street.
Thank you. Madam Manager, staff report.
This non-court ordinance would authorize the manager to enter into a capital improvements by agreement contract with two property owners along the unpaved portion of Eagle Street, consistent with CBJ 1510-290. Per the agreement, the two Eagle Street property owners would each pay $3,800 contribution towards the overall cost of paving and related improvements to the currently unpaved portion of Eagle Street. The total cost of the project is estimated to be $13,800. The agreement would allow the owner's contribution to be financed over a period of 10 years and an annual interest rate equivalent to the 15-year mortgage interest rate at the time of the approval of this ordinance. The CBJ will be repaving Eagle Street through the pavement management CIP this summer and would pave the unpaved easterly 100-foot as part of the project if this ordinance is approved. The issue was reviewed by the Public Works and Facilities Committee at its April 13, 2015 meeting, which recommended forwarding to the full assembly for approval. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you, Madam Manager. Is there anybody from the public who wishes to comment on Ordinance 2015-31? Seeing none, public comment is closed. Assembly action. Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would move that the Assembly approve Ordinance 2015-31 and would ask unanimous consent.
Is there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Madam Clerk, can we move forward to Ordinance 2014-24? Title, please.
An ordinance appropriating $83,800 as partial funding for a crisis intervention team. Grant funding provided by the Juneau Community Foundation Hope Endowment Fund.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Madam Manager, admin report.
The Crisis Intervention Team, CIT, will enhance community partnerships in addressing mental health issues in the community by utilizing designated resources to assist persons with mental health disorders. The core functions for the CIT is to provide services to individuals suffering from mental health and to their families, opposed to referring them to the criminal justice system. The allocated funds would be used for 6 months of an already existing CIT detective salary and overtime for five police officers, one community service officer, and two dispatchers to attend CIT training. The remaining funding would be used to provide internal department training. JPD's existing operating budget will cover the remaining 6 months' salary for the CIT detective. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you, Madam Manager. Is there anybody from the public who wishes to comment on Ordinance 2014-AQ-24-AQ? Seeing none, public comment is closed. Assembly action. Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would move that the Assembly approve Ordinance 2014-24-AQ and would ask unanimous consent.
Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Would the clerk please read Ordinance 2014-24-ASB?
An ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $673,400 as partial funding for various departments' fiscal year 2015 operating budget, funding provided by general fund and other fund balances, and roaded service area fund balance.
Thank you, Madam Manager. Admin report.
The airport anticipates exceeding its FY15 budget spending authority by $104,800. This is due to construction on Alex Holden Way. The anticipated funding for this is the current year revenues exceeding projected budget. Eagle Crest is anticipating a potential $50,000 shortfall in the current fiscal year operating budget due to low snowfall. The anticipated funding for this draw is its fund balance. The law department is anticipating a $14,000 shortfall in current fiscal year operating budget due to increased misdemeanor offender person days in the third quarter of FY15 related to prisoner care expenses. The anticipated funding for this is the general fund balance. Downtown parking anticipates exceeding its FY15 budget spending authority by $4,000. The increase is due to an additional security coverage in both parking garages. The anticipated funding for this is a draw on the parking fund balance. The Juneau School District has been authorized by the Assembly Finance Committee and the Assembly for $50,000 if this is approved tonight by the Assembly, $500,000 of increased expenditure authority to the Juneau School District to the FY15 state spending cap. This increase would be funded with a roaded service area fund balance. The Assembly Finance Committee reviewed and approved these increases at its meeting on May 6, 2015. Version B reduces the anticipated spending authority for downtown parking. Originally, Parks and Recreation staff recommended installing a timed door closure on the downtown transit center garage doors to help address security issues. They now will be increasing security coverage 5 days a week from 7 p.m. to 3 a.m. for the month of June if this is approved. If the additional security coverage reduces vandalism, they will continue this coverage next year and may require increased spending authority for FY16. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you, Madam Manager. I will open this up for public comment. Does anybody from the public wish to comment on Ordinance 2014-24-AQ? Seeing none, public comment is closed. Assembly action. Ms. Becker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move the Assembly adopt Ordinance 2014-24-ASB and ask for unanimous consent.
Thank you, Madam Manager. And so I will just correct my statement a minute ago and say that the public comment was closed on Ordinance 2014-24-ASB, not the other ordinance that I said. Thank you. And Ms. Becker has moved 2014-24-ASB. Is there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Unfinished business, Madam Manager.
None, thank you.
New business.
There's a design service contract for the Old Douglas Harbor rebuild. The rebuild of the Old Douglas Harbor will be accomplished in three phases. Phase one includes demolition of existing infrastructure and has been awarded to Turkana Construction. It is scheduled to begin in August after the Salmon Derby. Phase two includes dredging of the south section of the harbor and disposal of dredge materials in Gastineau Channel. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers will be performing that work beginning in mid-October. Phase three includes installation of new floats, electrical, water, and fire suppression systems. The work will begin in March 2016. P&D Engineering is currently under contract for professional engineering services for the old Douglas Harbor rebuild project and has completed phase one. The subject of this contract amendment is to complete phase three design and bid documents. The proposed fee for the professional services of phase three design and bidding is $308,940. The Docks and Harbors Finance Committee reviewed the fee proposal at its regular meeting on May 20, 2015, and recommended the full board approve the proposal. The Docks and Harbors Board reviewed the fee proposal at its regular meeting on May 21, 2015, and recommended the Assembly approve the fee proposal of $308,940 for Phase 3 design and bid services by P&D Engineering, Inc. I recommend this amendment be approved.
Thank you, Madam Manager. Is there anybody from the public who wishes to comment on the design services contract for Old Douglas Harbor rebuild? Seeing none, public comment is closed. Assembly action. Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move the Assembly approve the fee proposal of $308,940 for Phase 3 design and bid services by P&D Engineering, and I would ask for the old Douglas Harbor, and I'd ask for unanimous consent.
Is there any objections? So ordered. We'll move to Assembly reports.
Staff reports? Mr. Mayor.
Staff wants to say yes, go ahead.
Take a short break.
If we need to take a short break, let's do that. I'm sorry, I missed that. 5 minute break.
Thank you.
Pre-registration for Only Fools Run at Midnight closes on Thursday at 5 p.m. Register today at ktoo.org for this 5K or 1 mile walk, wheel, or run. It's the only way to guarantee your Fools Run t-shirt and to show your support for Southeast Alaska independent living and public media in Juneau. Dress in costume or compete for best centipede and win prizes. Register now at ktoo.org.
If you encounter a marine mammal that is injured, entangled, or dead, please contact NOAA Fisheries Alaska Marine Mammal Stranding Network. Rescue attempts can be dangerous for both rescuers and the animal, so do not approach or attempt to assist injured or entangled marine mammals on your own. Prompt reporting is the best way to help distressed animals. To report a marine mammal stranding or entanglement, call the NOAA Fisheries Stranding Hotline at 1-877-925-7773.
The Juno Symphony and assistant conductor Dwayne Corbin invite you to join us as we present music from the classics to the world of fantasy. You'll hear themes from blockbuster movies like The Lord of the Rings and The Sorcerer's Apprentice. Plus, we'll feature our talented 2014 Youth Solo Competition winners, and we'll unveil our exciting new season, June 13th and 14th at JDHS. Tickets available at the Jack, Hearthside Books, and at the door. Sponsored by Alaska Airlines, UAS, and BP, with support from the Alaska State Council on the Arts. For more information, visit junosymphony.org.
And you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. We are currently on break from the CBJ meeting. Tonight, mostly cloudy, scattered rain showers in the evening, lows around 43. South wind 10 to 15 miles per hour in the evening, becoming light and variable. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, slight chance of rain, highs around 55. Light winds becoming west 10 miles per hour in the afternoon. And Wednesday, rain, highs around 54. Thursday, numerous showers, highs around 54. Friday and Saturday, mostly cloudy, highs around 58 and 64. And Saturday night, lows around 50. The time is 8:59, and the CBJ Assembly has gone on a five-minute break. We will be listening to music until they come back.
Back in the day, in a sleepy little town, out of nowhere, a hippie band came around. They set up camp
down by the river.
Madam Manager, staff reports.
So I will turn it over to our city attorney.
I have two updates for you. One is on the Gastineau apartments. As of May 30th, both Mrs. Barrett and Mr. Barrett have been served with a demolition order by the building official. They have 10 days from the date of service or until June 10th to accept or reject the terms of the order. They have 20 days to appeal the order to the building review board. We have not heard from either one of them, but that process is now officially underway. That is my first. And my second is...
Is that the 15th day or the 16th day? I'm sorry.
You are bad.
And it's working days or calendar days.
Bad.
Go ahead,
calendar.
Mr. Reed. I'm sorry.
Calendar days.
That's okay. last week, the federal district court awarded the CBJ $1.2 million against APARC. That was in response to our motion for summary judgment. I just want to let that sink in for a moment because that was so exciting. But
blood rocks turned
up. APARC filed for bankruptcy on May 20th, which just happened to be the date their opposition to the motion for summary judgment was due. And they did not notify the federal court that they had filed for bankruptcy. So normally, filing for bankruptcy works an automatic stay by virtue of the bankruptcy court, which, if they had provided notice to the federal district court judge, would have taken jurisdiction to enter the decision from the federal district court judge. There is a question pending right now. The district court judge has asked us to give him some authority for leaving the order in place or arguing why he shouldn't vacate the order. So what is going to happen, what we're in the process of doing, is we will be filing a motion to lift the stay with the bankruptcy court and then filing a motion with the federal court judge that he retain jurisdiction over this litigation that has been pending for over a year and a half and issue the order. Now, there's likely not going to be any funds to recover. According to APARC's bankruptcy documents, they have listed, I think, if I'm recalling correctly, $50,000 in assets. That's not going to go very far, but I believe it was important in the assembly's intent that we retain the judgment. So that's what we're working for right now. But the court did issue the order.
And are you going to see to it that we each get a copy for framing? Any questions for Ms. Mead? Thank you very much, Ms. Mead. Anything else from staff?
No, thank you.
We'll move forward to assembly reports and do committee reports. Mr. Jones?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Human Resources Committee met just prior to assembly meeting. We had several issues on our plate. We took up appointments for the Utility Advisory Board. We had two seats open. We had one applicant. And so the Human Resources Committee recommends that we appoint Jeffrey Larson to a term expiring 5/31/2018.
Is there any objections to that? Seeing none, so ordered.
And George Porter is willing to continue to serve until replaced. And several of the boards, as we talked tonight, we didn't fill all the seats. And the clerks informed us that they have changed the ad to state that those boards will stay open until filled, as opposed to a term date.
So we have two positions on the utility board then?
Yes, and there's one now that is fake, is has a person in it, but that person doesn't
right.
want to serve if we can find another replacement.
Okay, thank you.
The Historic Resources Advisory Committee, I would also refer to in your packet for the HRC is their annual report, which is fairly extensive. I would suggest that we read that. The Human Resources Committee looked at the applications and are recommending the reappointment of Donald Harris to a term expiring 6/30/2018, and new appointments to Daryl Miller and Corenza Bott for terms expiring 6/30/2018.
Are there any objections to those appointments?
I missed. What committee was that?
Historic Resources Advisory Committee.
Okay, thank you.
No objections? So ordered.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We also took up appointments to the Juneau Commission on Aging. The Juneau Commission on Aging is a 7-member board that as of tonight had two seats that are vacant for terms that are still valid through 16 and 17, and had three open seats to expire on 6/30/18. We had, so that's a total of 5 seats, and we had 5 applicants. However, the chair of the Juneau Commission on Aging had approached the clerk's office about having the clerks attend a meeting on Thursday of this week at 1:15 at the Senior Center to go over with the Commission on Aging what their duties and responsibilities are, what the assembly feels are their priorities, what the ordinance is. The clerks felt that really wasn't their role, that it should be the role of the assembly to do that. And so the actions of the Human Resources Committee tonight was to postpone any action on appointments to the Juneau Commission on Aging, at least 3 or 4 of us will attend the meeting on the 11th. Of this week, 1:15 usually we'll be on about 2:15 to talk to them about roles and responsibilities, what we want, what we like to see, and encourage them and anybody else to increase the applicant pool, hopefully, for the Juneau Commission on Aging. And after that discussion, the HRC will make a decision whether or not we would meet on June 29th to take up appointments or move the appointment to the end of July. So we took no action on any appointments tonight. And once we have met with the Juneau Commission on Aging and had a discussion with hopefully the applicants and with the existing members, we will have a better idea of how we might want to proceed. But that was the recommended action from the Human Resources Committee.
And, Mr. Jones, does that mean then that you're going to review the ordinance that created them?
Yes, and it's in the Human Resources packet. We will sit down and go over that with them. We will meet with them. We will have as long a discussion. And hopefully we will be done with that discussion in time to be here for the appeals special assembly meeting that same night.
You will be, I'm sure.
Yes, I hope so. Mr. Mayor, we took up the appointments for the Treadwell Arena Advisory Board. And last meeting, we didn't have enough applicants. We left it open. We ended up for this new 7-member advisory board. We ended up with 7 applicants. The clerk's office contacted each of the applicants, read them the ordinance stating that if you are a current board member or if you are a family member of a current board member of any association, we can only appoint 3, and we wanted to know if any of them were in that. Through various testimonies from one of the applicants and from Mr. Nankervis, who's familiar, we finally sorted out who's on boards and who isn't. So out of the 7 applicants, we had 2 applications from persons that weren't on boards. We had five applications from people that were. We can only fill three. So the recommendation from the Human Resources Committee to the Assembly is that we appoint Patricia Collins to the Treadwell Advisory Board for a term expiring 5/31/17. That we appoint Elizabeth Ballstad to a term expiring 5/31/18. That we appoint Jason Souza to a term expiring 5/31/17. We appoint Molly McCormick to a term expiring 5/31/18. And at his request, we appoint Stephen Quinn to the board for a term expiring 5/31/16. You'll notice that we stagger. We have 1 1-year term, we have 2 2-year terms, and 2 3-year terms of the five persons we're recommending be appointed. Leaves us still 2 vacancies. We need 2 members of the public, not board members of affiliated organizations. And again, I talked with the manager of the Treadwell Arena and others tonight, and the clerks, and we'll keep it open, and we hopefully will fill those other 2. So those are our recommendations, and I can do that one more time if you want. But
I don't think anybody need it another time. I don't think so. So we have 5 people up for the advisory board. Is there any objections to any of those 5? Seeing none, so ordered.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And just the conclusion, on your desk in front of you is a green folder. That is your packet for Wednesday night. We will be meeting at 5:30 as a committee of the whole, doing Docks and Harbors, Eagle Crest, and the vacancy on the Planning Commission. Wednesday night at that meeting, you will be given the packet for the June 15th meeting, in which we will have the Airport Board and the new aquatic facilities. We have asked in the first question in the questions that we ask of the Aquatics Board, we wrote out the ordinance, what the qualifications and limitations were, asked them to identify who's on what. We will try to come up with a cheat sheet to present to the Assembly so you know who's on a board, who's affiliated, who, whatever those qualifications are. And I believe we still have a valid 10 applications for the 7 seats. So hopefully we'll have some choice, and that'll be on the 15th. And I believe that's it, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Lots of good things. Remember, everybody on the Assembly, it's your responsibility to help get out the word that we still need people on these individual committees. So please, whenever you talk with your newspaper, whenever you talk with your radio stations, that you give a pitch for that, and Ms. Fika or Ms. Weld and Beth can get well.
Wrong Beth.
Woo!
Wrong Beth.
Whoa! Wow.
You can give you which boards are open. Okay.
That's what happened.
So. Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Jones. Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Public Works and Facilities Committee. The last meeting was canceled. The next meeting is scheduled for June 22nd. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Crane?
Yes, we had our next finance committee scheduled for June the 17th, and that has been canceled. So our next finance committee meeting is now scheduled for July the 30th.
All right. Thank you, ma'am. Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Lands and Resources Committee met June 1. We heard the parking lease to the state that was on this evening's agenda. We also heard reports from staff about a proposal to temporarily use an inactive piece of the city's former gravel pit in Costco, right across the river from the Lemon Creek Correctional Center, for an asphalt plant, as well as an update from staff on the ongoing work to get a subdivision and the appropriate permits in place in the area that I always think of as Area 2A, across Renninger Street from DZ Middle School. That proceeds apace, although staff is awaiting a fill permit from the Army Corps of Engineers, a process of indeterminate length. And while there was no official action taken by the Lands Committee, when staff floated the idea of just off Render Street naming the new one Jackie Street, we all smiled. On the Marijuana Committee, the Marijuana Committee voted to forward some initial zoning recommendations through the Assembly to the Planning Commission. And in brief, those would involve a conditional use permit for commercial marijuana operations of all kinds, would involve 200-foot buffers from property line to property line, which is a little different than the state does for alcohol licensing. It's a little bit longer distance, but I think easier to understand. And then forwarded zone recommendations for cultivation, for retail, and for testing and processing. And so the Planning Commission can begin working on those as separate lines within the table of permissible uses.
Thank you, Mr. Keel. Ms. Becker.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Mayor. We had a committee of the whole meeting on June 1st, and the mayor declared June the National Safety Month, and we did hear a report on risk management, which fit right into the National Safety Month. We gave direction that the next community planning effort be in Lemon Creek. However, there are actions that are already in place and working. Mr. Hart and others are working on certain actions downtown, and those will continue in the time allowed with CDD. We received a parking update from our consultant, and we determined that we did not want further study on outsourcing. No one was interested in us outsourcing, so we didn't ask for another report. And we agreed that Ms. Crane and the manager will work with Juneau Community Foundation to determine the possibilities of SSAB being run by them. Thank you.
Being run by what?
By Juneau Community Foundation.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Mead, you had something?
I neglected to mention that next week is the oral argument in front of the Alaska Supreme Court on the Local Boundary Commission matter.
And you and Rob, Mr. Steedel, are going up?
Yes.
Any questions on that? The old Petersburg boundary thing that is still with us. Hopefully we can get the answers. Okay, liaison reports. Ms. Becker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Chamber of Commerce Board of Directors will meet this Wednesday. The speaker for this coming Thursday lunch will be John Isaac from ATCOM Technology to talk about Juneau International Airport Master Plan. Southeast Conference Board of Directors met June 4th. We heard a legislative update from Kevin Jardell. We agreed to forward a resolution in support of the Medicaid expansion and reform. And just to let everyone know that Southeast Conference will be held in Prince Rupert, August 15 to 17. And we're hoping that the ferries are running. And DIG met this last Friday with Kirby Day presenting the 2015 Tourism Best Management Practices, and that's a little booklet which I'm sure we've all seen. And JPD Lieutenant David Campbell discussed the downtown police officers, and he highlighted some of the things that the police can and can't do, and kind of made it clear that we may want them to do everything to resolve all our problems, but that isn't necessarily what they can do. They can only arrest according to what authority they've been given through statute. The police will give us their annual report on June 22. The BAM meeting, the after-school program at the two middle schools, had an end-of-the-year meeting and discussed the number of students who are attending. Attending in both schools is about 1,000 unduplicated students, so it's gone quite up from last year. CBJ Parks and Rec Department, Zach Gordon Youth Center, have agreed to run the BAM program next year, and the BAM board will continue to have the same responsibilities for fundraising and getting people to come in and do the workshops and setting up the programs. So that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Madam Becker? Ms. White, liaison reports?
Yes, thank you. Since we have the other meeting on Wednesday night, while the airport has their board meeting, I was also going to mention the chamber guest for this week. But let's see, on Juneau Convention and Visitors Bureau, some exciting things. JCBB instigated an article that was printed in the New York Times Sunday edition, which was about the Juneau food scene. The article took up over a half page in the travel section. Had that been paid ad space, that would have had a value of $81,100. But it was an article, it was an op-ed, so it didn't cost them anything. Nine local businesses were talked about during the article. That the print edition has a paid circulation of over 2.5 million, and the New York Times.com site has over 6.2 million users, so that could result in some increased activity. In addition, they noticed on their Google Analytics a pretty big jump from 2014 to 2015, looking at the same period of time of April 28th to May 28th of each year. They went from total website visits of 29,628 to 53,467, so a rather sizable jump. So hopefully that's going to mean more visitors coming to our community and spending money. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. White. Mr. Keel?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Nothing to report this evening.
Thank you, Ms. Crane.
At the last meeting, the hospital board got a committee report on CAMU and what the committee is doing on that issue. There was also an update on the GEMA contract, the contract for emergency room services, and considerable discussion by the board on that contract and progress to date. In addition, the board took a very close look at the financial report and usage statistics and had a discussion there. There was also an update on the status of the demonstration project, which we know means approximately $4 million in federal funds to the hospital each year. It is not looking likely that that will be continued by the 30th of June, but there is some activity in the Senate and some hope that it still will be approved this fall sometime. So we're not ruling it out yet.
Is our lobbyist working on that, Ms. Crane?
Yes,
know?
I believe so. They've been in contact with the lobbyist.
Okay,
yeah.
Good.
And there was a report from the compliance officer.
All right. Ms. Gladachevsky?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Parks and Rec Advisory Committee had a short meeting this last month. They talked about several things, their bench policy. They did a great job on their mission statement for the comp plan. As anyone who's been in a mission statement group attempt, it can go on forever. But they actually came up with one, so that was great. Their next meeting is July 7th, and the local emergency planning committee has not met, but they're since we last talked. But their next meeting is this Wednesday, noon at the fire hall.
All right, Ms. Troll.
Yes, I'm still here. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Affordable Housing Commission met on Tuesday, June 2nd. They had an opportunity to review the housing action plan progress with the consultants. They also approved a letter regarding the city property on 6th Street in Douglas, and that will be coming to the assembly soon. We also then moved in back into the discussion about the accessory apartment grant program, and I have a motion relative to that. I don't know if I should bring it up here or under assembly comments.
So last time we heard from the commission and they wanted us to bring that back up. Do you want to hear that motion to do that at this meeting right here from Ms. Troll?
Yes, I was able to review this with the city attorney to make sure that procedurally, if there is the will of the assembly, we could move forward to bring it back before the assembly. I'm not asking for the motion won't deal with final action. It'll be, well, you want your staff to prepare an ordinance to use $72,000 from the Affordable Housing Fund for purposes of creating an accessory apartment grant program. And I have the language written out, and there should be some copies available for everybody.
They're passing them out right now, Ms. Troll.
Okay.
Go ahead and read it.
Okay, so basically it's I move to direct staff to prepare an ordinance to use $72,000 from the Affordable Housing Fund for purposes of creating an accessory apartment grant program. And if I could speak to that motion.
Go ahead, Ms. Stroll.
Thank you. Essentially, the Affordable Housing Commission, they realize that the Housing Action Plan, it's going to focus on redevelopment. That's the best way to get more units, particularly, you know, single bedroom, low cost rentals. And they feel that moving ahead on this is it's a very low cost per housing unit. And they feel that nothing that is likely to come from the Housing Action Plan will yield units at such a low cost. They've done a lot of work for over a year now to try to move forward on the accessory apartments. We have modified our ordinances to accommodate them, and they don't want to miss a complete new building season. So that's why I'm as a liaison, and I concur with their findings, and I'm prepared to ask the staff to develop an ordinance for our consideration at our next assembly meeting.
Thank you, Ms. Troll. And the $72,000 is already in the Affordable Housing Fund?
There is about $440,000 in the existing fund.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions from Ms. Troll? Go ahead, Ms. Kladichev.
When is the Housing Action Plan going to be done? As I recall, we rejected this. We were going to wait for the Housing Action Plan.
That was one of the recommendations. Staff?
Well, they're expecting, I think, the Housing Action Plan will be done toward the end of August.
Staff?
Yep, that's our understanding as well. And also the consultants will be up here July 2nd and 3rd, I believe. So if any of you would like to speak with them, they'll be in town at that time.
So the motion before us is to move this one paragraph and to have a ordinance drawn up for us to evaluate and vote on. Mr. Nankervis first, and then Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have a question for staff, as my memory's not great. This came before us. I'm pretty sure it was this entire body, and I thought that this body rejected that. And I don't think it can come back up again if we rejected that. Is that correct?
So what came up before was an ordinance to reappropriate funds from a grant program, from a state grant program, from the Affordable Housing Fund into this grant program. And there were limitations in the grant documents and the appropriating language for the grant documents that suggested that we could not directly use the funds in that manner. So my understanding is that Ms. Troll is now recommending that the funding for this program be taken out of the general affordable housing fund, which is a different motion than the one that came before you before.
Thank you.
Mr. Keel, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm going to object, as I did the last time, and just to speak briefly to my objection, it's not because I don't think this could be a helpful idea. It's primarily because I really do think that we should keep our powder dry and our cash in hand until we have our housing action plan. And it may very well be that the plan we adopt says this is the very best idea you could possibly put forward, and then we should go full tilt boogie. But if it has other action steps for us that could produce a better return, I think that's where we should use the money. And since we are paying $70,000+ for a housing action plan, I think it's important that we wait and use it. I guess I'm also a little concerned at the notion that there's an urgency on this building season. I mean, the way I count the calendar, the very earliest this thing could be in effect is the third week in August. I think the only accessory apartment that's building season dependent that you're going to incentivize with this is one that's already happening, which is not the best use of incentive money. So I think that it may very well be a great idea, but that this is not the time.
Thank you. Any other comments? And so you objected?
Yes, Mr. Mayor.
So we have objection. Please read the roll. Nobody else wants to speak to it. So this is Madam Crane.
I would just say I voted against it the last time to wait for the report. But I also know that the Affordable Housing Commission has spent a lot of time and discussion on this. And they feel that it is going to help move them forward. And so I'm prepared to vote for it this time. We asked them to put the work into this. They've done it. They don't feel that this will take away from anything that we get in the report and might help us move forward. I understand Mr. Keel's concern with the dates, but I also want to respect the work that the Affordable Housing Commission has done and would like to see us move forward.
Thank you, Ms. Crane. Any other comments? Madam Clerk, please read the roll.
Okay. Ms. Troll?
Yes.
Ms. White?
Yes.
Ms. Becker?
Yes.
Ms. Crane?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
No.
Ms. Gladyszewski?
No.
Mr. Keel?
No.
Mr. Nankervis?
Yes.
Mayor Sanford?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. So, staff, you have your marching orders on this?
We do.
Thank you.
Ms.
Troll, anything else?
Yes. I also attended the JEDC meeting on June 3rd, but I'll let Mr. Jones, the mayor's designee, report on that. The other activity for me was on Thursday, June 4th, the Tonics Advisory Committee had a one-hour video conference with Senator Murkowski. She was able to ask us questions specifically about our recommendation. She was very encouraged by the development and assured the Tonics Advisory Committee that if we needed to have a dog in the fight to keep the Forest Service capable of implementing that recommendation, she was happy to be our dog. So there you have it.
Thank you, Ms. Troll. Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Last week's Eagle Crest board meeting was canceled. The next meeting is scheduled for July 2nd at 5:30 Thursday night in room 224. The Docks and Harbor Board had their regular meeting on Thursday, May 21st. One of the items on their agenda we spoke to tonight and voted to approve, which was the design service fee for the old Douglas Harbor. They also discussed changing the rate for the haul-out fees at the Auk Bay Loading Facility to bring them more in line with what the private sector is charging, yet still higher than what the private sector is charging, just not twice what the private sector was committed to. And they also renewed the lease for the property next to the Seadrome building with Gold Belt. It's called a cultural preservation lease, I think is the name of it. Mr. Yucatil's in the back. He can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that's the section of property that we were talking about there where their dock is, where the Gold Belt dock is there. That was renewed. And a number of other things were discussed, and I'll pull out the one that I thought was pretty interesting for the majority of us, was the cruise ship berth monitoring. There were some people that were concerned that the pile driving for 16B might affect their businesses and damage them. And if you've been here a few years, you know what we went through with Lemon Creek and gravel extraction and buildings there. So they have hired somebody, Kristen Colden, with Alaska Seismic and Environmental LLC, and they've got monitoring systems that they've put in place, particularly what she discussed was the tram building. They put monitors in there to monitor the effect of driving pilings and what that might have. And basically, I'll say it's an ounce of prevention is what they're putting out there now. So when they start driving the pilings, we'll have some data that comes in. And I would say that is the biggie off of that. The board also discussed the Douglas Harbor rebuild. And as we're aware, we spent money on the plan review tonight. The dock removal will take place after the Golden North Salmon Derby. The docks will be removed, and then they're hoping to, in October, start doing the dredging. And that's a 2016 sometime completion date, Mr. Yucatil. What time in the year?
I'm hoping for right before this Golden Salmon Derby.
Okay, so right before next August's Derby. Okay, and that was the major news from Docks and Harbor Board. Their next meeting is scheduled for Thursday, June 25th, here in Chambers. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nankervis. Mr. Jones?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Planning Commission has finished up their work on the subdivision ordinance. It was introduced tonight. Suggest you all spend a lot of time reading it. I know some of you have already started to meet with CDD to talk about your questions and concerns, and would encourage you to continue to do that. Their Title 49 committee has also, I think, completed their work on the table of permissible uses related to daycare, and that will be coming out of that committee and going to the Planning Commission and hopefully coming to us on short order. On their agenda tomorrow night is to do the work on the table of permissible uses related to transitional housing based on our approval of the Haven House appeal. That's on their agenda tomorrow, so that should be being completed. The Juneau Economic Development Council met. They reviewed and approved the budget for the FY16. There was also a lot of discussion related to the $65,000 that we appropriated for their work on the Juneau Economic Plan. Their report on their meetings with Ms. Kiefer and Mr. Steedle. That is ongoing in terms of the relationship and cooperation between those two groups. And I would encourage that continue, and that the result of that, hopefully, given our discussion and even a little bit of disconnect between Ms. Troll and I as to what we thought was an appropriate role, that sort of that gets reduced enough to writing so we sort of know who's supposed to be doing what and we can monitor both. I just think that that's really clear. It was a good discussion. I think it was straightforward and honest. But if whatever the agreement is between the city manager and what she's going to propose with our idea that the city manager is who we're going to ask for as to what the progress is and things like that and what JADC is going to do, that get done in writing so we know who to ask which questions of. I think they're planning on getting the information out to the board members, including myself, sitting in for the mayor on the executive director's annual evaluation, and they will be taking that up at the next meeting or beyond when I won't be there, but I know Ms. Troll will be there. The Downtown Business Association had a meeting. Again, lots of discussion around our actions related to Ms. Troll's motion of reappropriating the $150,000 for wayfinding and circulator and those kinds of issues, and our directions to the city manager to take that money and deal with those issues. And I think they would very much appreciate being involved in that discussion, since both those issues sort of came from them, and a lot of feelings about whether or not they were understood and stuff. So I would encourage the city manager to reach out to the Downtown Business Association on that. I think that they would like to be involved and to help the city in using those funds appropriately to the best that they can. And then sort of related to the Downtown Business Association, but didn't come directly from that, but Ms. Crane mentioning that the June 17th Finance Committee meeting was canceled, is that on June 17th at 6:30 at Centennial Hall is the second public meeting on the Front and Franklin visualization as to what's going to happen. We had the first one at Heritage. On that evening at 6:30 at Centennial Hall is the second public meeting in which the consultants will bring back their work based on the first go-round. I would encourage all of us to attend that. It was well attended, and just see where they're going, but it is at Centennial Hall, June 17th at 6:30. And that's my liaison report.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Presiding officer reports. Do we have any? Right now, we don't have any.
Whoops. All of us are going to be presiding officers next week, or on Thursday.
Go ahead.
There's also the next, the Bicknell matter will be heard on June 15th, Sunday evening.
June 15th?
Mr. Corso will be referred to the hearing officer.
And do we have all these written down and sent out to the assembly, the different meetings?
You know,
we seem to have a run on different meetings here.
Well, Mr. Mayor, June 15th is the 5:30 for Bicknell. Yeah, and then the human resources is right after that.
No, it starts at 5:30. We'll
human
be
resources
before.
At 5:30.
What?
Mr.
Yes.
Mayor, this is the confusion I asked about on the calendar, and I thought that Bicknell meeting was gone. Because there's an HRC meeting at 5:30.
You're not sitting as the appeal board on the Bicknell matter. Mr. Corso is the hearing officer.
Oh, okay.
I'm just giving you an update that is being heard.
Okay,
we don't have a role until he gets done. And when we scheduled the HRC meeting, that Bicknell appeal was set for a different date. I don't know what happened to change that, but.
Okay.
Yeah. It was
so
not on.
Maybe that was
it. Does everybody have the date straight on the special meetings this week and the rest of this month? There's a couple of HR stuff meetings that we have to go to special. There's the 10th
and the 15th.
Feel free to list them off, Mr. Mayor, if you.
I don't have them in my mind.
The 10th and 15th is the HRC, the 11th is the appeals.
So,
the protest.
If we can get staff, the clerk, to do that again with all the dates that you put out here about a week or two ago, if we can update that piece of paper, make sure we send it out to all the assembly members so that they can get a copy of it, and then we can move forward from there. Okay. Anything else? Assembly comments and questions? Mr. Jones?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. After this long evening, I almost hate to bring this up, but I asked Ms. Mead a question. The question arose during the marijuana committee related to some questions that the committee was considering regarding whether or not the borough could be the business license for marijuana functions and then lease it out, or whether we could require a business license of the marijuana providers, a local license as well as a state license. And I asked that question about a general business license. And I had raised this before during our retreat when we were looking at priorities about how do we enforce sign ordinances, how do we enforce collection of sales tax, how do we enforce some of the compliance issues that we've been getting emails about on various things that we have dealt with. And it seems like sometimes we don't seem to have a mechanism by which we can do anything other than jawbone, to be polite. And so I wanted to broach the subject again of whether or not we as a body want to start considering, and I don't know how long that process might take, whether or not City and Borough of Juneau wants to get into the business of issuing business licenses, that we can take some action if a person applies for a business license and they still owe a sales tax, or they're out of compliance on zoning, or they've got outstanding issues related to sign issues or whatever, we won't issue them a license to operate their business until that's done. I know there's lots of other issues. I asked questions about exceptions, kind of things. But I just feel that perhaps this is a mechanism that we have not explored as a way to, and I wasn't talking about, you know, trying to raise revenue. I mean, I don't care if we charge $25 for the business license.
Free.
Make it free. But they can't operate unless they have a valid license signed by the city, and there's rules on how to get that license and how to keep it, things that we can enforce. So I wanted to broach the subject to maybe ask if it could, if some slack time be put on a committee of the whole, or is there some other time that we could sort of have a general discussion about that and whether or not we want to proceed in any serious manner. But I just throw that out as the only concept I can come up with that might help with some of these other enforcement issues that we just seem to go round and round and round on.
Ms. Kiefer, anything, any comments on that?
I believe it came up in discussions with the committee that looked at exemptions, and I thought it was on a long-term list for finance to take up in the future. Yes. And I don't know if the finance chair has a plan for that.
I will speak to the finance director. It's not on the agenda for July.
Right.
So. Is it a long-term idea to look at, or do you know?
We will.
Okay. Is there any objections from the assembly on us looking at that and seeing what's a possibility? This is only the possibility stages here.
A comment.
Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have tentatively scheduled for our Marijuana Policy Committee meeting on July the 2nd, a memo that the city attorney is beginning to prepare. She has some sort of Supreme Court thing she thinks she has to do first. I don't know what that is. But she's beginning to prepare about whether, in fact, the CBJ can have a marijuana business license under our home rule powers. And we've had some preliminary discussions, and I think it's an excellent legal question. That discussion will be able to inform the finance chair as she plans her agenda after the mid-July finance meeting.
And so you're talking in relationship to just one business, the marijuana businesses,
potentially
to a business license Mr. Jones is talking about to do for all businesses in general.
That is the question we'll explore.
And we know that we can do a general business license in the status of our municipal code and everything. It's in our billywhack to do if we want to. So, but I don't know if we can take one segment of businesses and do it. That'll be interesting to see what Ms. Mead brings forward to us. So, yeah, that'd be a good maybe place to start, is let it go through your committee and then move it to finance for them to look at and move it forward from there. So, be good. Any other comments, questions on that? Okay. Let's see. Mr. Jones, anything else?
I have nothing else.
Mr. Nankervis, assembly comments and questions?
Thank you, Mayor. Mr. Mayor, three things. Two of these from a long time ago. Roadside fishing, the committee we have, help me, I'm going to forget the title of it, on fishing has talked about promoting the roadside fishery in Juneau, and as such they were looking at the end of Channel Drive. And it was a long time ago, Madam Manager, that we spoke about the signage and stuff out there about parking. I don't remember hearing anything back, so I went out and looked at it last week. And it says no parking on the roadway or within 4 feet. Everywhere past where the old Channel Marina used to be. So basically, there's nothing out there. And it seems to me that there's probably a way we could do some signage on that to allow people to park on the shoulder, because you can't get more than 4 feet off or you're in the channel or on Egan Drive. And I believe that the intent was to get to be able to maintain fire truck access to a hydrant down there. That's what I think. And I would maintain if you can get down there with traffic in a car, you can get down there with a fire truck. Again, using Gastineau Avenue as an example. I would like to know if it's okay with the committee or with this group, excuse me, not the committee, to have the manager look at possibly reposting that street if we can do that to promote the roadside fisheries.
Is that street ours or the state's?
Good question.
You'll have to figure out.
They'll figure that out.
Okay, I was thinking Channel Drive was ours. All right, the other thing was a long time ago I got the permission of this body to discuss a graffiti ordinance with the city attorney. And I'm here to report that I would like to stop looking into that, because what I was looking at and was a way to try and get businesses and property owners to cover up that graffiti. Well, there's nothing I could find out there that didn't penalize somebody who was already a victim, meaning the property owner, with a fine or something like that. And I don't, in good conscience, want to do that. So I'm just going to drop that if that's okay with everybody. And the follow-up to that is what I will plan on doing is approaching a business, a local business, and see if they will donate paint, leftover paint, for that purpose and donate it to businesses so they can cover it up. And all the paints, when you mix them together, you come up with one color. And depending where you live, it's a different color on the primary. Primary color is the way it works out anyway. And I believe my discussions before, they said it was some kind of a gray, a dark gray. But that's what I'll do is I'll talk with the business and maybe I can come back and report that we have a business willing to donate some paint to do that, to cover up the power boxes are a biggie around town that get painted. But everything else, we have a mechanism in place to penalize the people spray painting it. But my goal is to try and get that stuff covered up as well, rather than let the delinquents get free advertising for their it's not a product, bad behavior. And lastly, I'd like to say that this last Friday, a number of us, four of us, I believe, went out to the Aurora Harbor dedication, and Mr. Carl Yucatil and his crew put on a very nice festivity in spite of the weather that did relent finally. After we were all wet, it relented. And the staff pitches in to buy those hot dogs and provide that stuff for us, and they did a great job in spite of the weather. It was nice to see. I think we had about 30, 35 people there for that. And it was great to see, and hopefully we can do it again next year when the other half gets done. A lot of great things happening with the harbor. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nankervis. Ms. Troll, comments, questions?
I'll just make one short comment, which was that this past weekend, along with Ms. Crane and Ms. Kiefer, I attended the Juno Sustainability Forum up in Fairbanks that was hosted by Governor Walker and Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott. It was a very illuminating forum. The discussions were robust, diverse, and respectful. I felt very positive about some of the opportunities that came out of that, and I think several of us that were there in attendance for Juno intend to do some town halls, some follow-up. So just want to let you know that from my perspective, it was very worthwhile to attend, and we hope to build on the momentum of that forum by engaging more of the citizenry in Juno. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Troll. Ms. Gladyszewski?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I wanted to thank the League of Women Voters and all the people and the city clerk's office and the library and all the people that worked to organize that How to Run for Office workshop this weekend. That was excellent. The mayor and Ms. White and I all were able to attend, and there were over 30 people in the room, several of whom were thinking of running for office, not necessarily this year, so to those of you who are running. But But, you know, it takes a while to decide to do such a thing. So there was a number of, it was really wonderful to see a number of people that are thinking about it. And it was very well organized, thanks to Pat Watt and all those folks who did that. It was great to be part of it.
Thank you. Ms. Gray?
I'll just piggyback on Ms. Troll's comments on the meeting in Fairbanks this weekend. It was entitled Building a Sustainable Future, Conversations with Alaskans. There is a lot of information on the governor's website. There is a report, Potential Fiscal and Revenue Options, to take a look at. There was a great diversity of Alaskans attending the meeting. The conversations were very interesting. The information that they presented, very good information. And it is a conversation that we're going to need to continue in Juneau with the public so that they really understand the situation that we're in and what the potential options may be. So I would direct members who of the public who are interested in this to the mayor's, to the governor's website for more information. And I would be happy to share with the assembly the information that I brought back if
is there one
copies.
Pamphlet that you would recommend that we all have?
Well, this was the major one, the Building a Sustainable Future.
Uh-huh.
So I'd be happy to have the...
Does anybody else want a hard copy of that?
Just, yeah.
Everybody?
I'm okay. Kind of electronic.
Fine. We've got five.
Okay. That so I'll leave them with the clerk, and maybe we can have them ready then by Wednesday evening.
She'll put them in a box. Yeah. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you. Any else, Ms. Crane?
No.
Mr. Keel?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. It's actually been a while since we had an assembly meeting, and I don't know that we have met actually Memorial Day, so I wanted to just take the opportunity publicly to thank all the organizations that put on the Memorial Day observances here in town, the VFW, the DAV, the Legion, the Southeast Native Vets. I really appreciated the Memorial Day services this year. A couple of other little things. I had the opportunity to attend two of the plaque exchange ceremonies on behalf of the city for cruise ships celebrating their first season calling in Juneau. Ms. Gladyshevsky was able to join me for the Ruby Princess. And also this weekend we welcomed the Jewel of the Seas. So it's always good to have those ships transiting our waters and the people, the visitors, and the economic activity they bring. The Convention Visitors Bureau does a good job of providing a reciprocal plaque and representing our city. I had the honor of speaking at Floyd Dryden Middle School's 8th grade promotion ceremony, and that was an inspiring event. If you've never been to an 8th grade promotion ceremony, frankly, it surprised me. It really was a remarkable thing. The cynic in me sort of thinks, well, you finish middle school and you got to go on to high school. What are we celebrating here? But the simple fact is it's a tough time, and they work really hard. The teachers and the families do a heck of a job, and it was really remarkable. So I encourage all of you next year, if you get the chance, to see one of those. And my final comment this evening, Mr. Mayor, while the UAS Campus Council hasn't met, so I didn't have a liaison report from them, on June the 1st, our very longtime chancellor of the University of Alaska Southeast, John Pugh, retired, and our provost for some years now became our new chancellor, Rick Caulfield. And I just can't say enough to thank John for his years of dedicated service, what he has done for UAS here in Juneau and the campuses throughout our region. Is really remarkable, and it's inspiring. He's made a tremendous contribution to the institution and to our region. And I will say that I once worked for a boss who said, I meet with these chancellors and the president, but it's the provost who do the actual work. And now we've got one of those in the chancellor's chair. So Rick Caulfield is going to be great to work with, and I think we're in for yet more years of improvement and success from our university.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Keel. Ms. White?
I would like to, thank you. I would like to echo what Ms. Gladyszewski said about the League of Women Voters Forum. I found it to be pretty entertaining. Wish I could have stayed for the whole thing, but duty calls. So that's it.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Ms. Becker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I went to the very, very nice honor that was given to Clark Greening, event held at the Governor's House, honoring the Juno Community Foundation, honored Clark as one of the founders of the foundation with a very nice tea, refreshments and all. It was really very, very nice. And it was amazing to me to hear all the many, many, many things that Clark has done in this community. I mean, it's just, the list is very, very long. I also went to John Pugh's retirement, and Hal and Mr. Keel and I were brought up because John remembered everybody in the room in one way or another and brought them to the front to say something nice about them because that's the way he is. I went with the mayor to two Rotary clubs to talk about budget and what's happening in the community. He did not need me, but he just took me along, and I got to talk a little bit. Gold Rush Days are coming the 20th and the 21st, and at Gold Rush Days, which will be at Sandy Beach, we will have, the chamber will have an area, and the Sewage Statute Committee will have an area. And so go to that. It's always a fun event, too. And let's see, I went to the ribbon cutting also, except I didn't really get there for the ribbon cutting, but I got there for the hot dogs. And what's important anyway? You know? I had another meeting that kept me too long. And I think that I heard Mr. Yucatel say that this coming Saturday is going to be Community Appreciation Day. Is that correct? No? What did you say to me about that? I was wrong.
You
never
just
mind.
Did it.
Never mind. You just were telling me that there would be hot dogs, but you didn't really mean it.
you had the community appreciation hot dog.
That was it. Okay. All right, that's great. Okay, I'm sorry. I just thought that's what you said. And then the one thing that I did today that was pretty interesting, I started out at 8 o'clock this morning at a workshop that was entitled Behaviors of a Cohesive Team. And if any of you would ever like to know how we could become cohesive, I can tell you, but no, no, I'm just kidding, because it was very interesting, and I thought that it was a good workshop. It was a good workshop, so I was glad I got to go with that. So anyway, thank you. That's it.
All right. Thank you. And I just have one thing. I went to a fifth grade granddaughter's promotion. So any of those other promotions or graduations you went to were great. But you should see the fifth graders over at Gastineau School. They do a great job. It was pretty. It was fun, really fun.
Yeah.
Okay, the next thing on the list is continuation of public participation on non-agenda items. Is there anybody from the public who wishes to give us their 4 cents worth about anything going on in the city? Seeing none, public comment is closed. We have no executive session. Anything else, Madam Manager?
No, thank you.
And happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Amy.